Police, Mike O'Hara, speaking yesterday to a panel of MPs over that decision to not allow fans to that football match.
The challenge around risk decision-making is public safety has got to be at the heart of it. So, again, I understand the frustration, but there is no conspiracy here. This was a decision based on safety.
But police invented a game that never took place, and plotting police part two.
The family of a teenager are wrongly told that he died in a car crash, only to find out 3 weeks later. I'm Alex Taylor-Brown with the story.
Plus the drive to safety, motions to face tougher rules on drink driving and other measures. It all starts after the 7 o'clock news on LBC.
On your radio, on the LBC app and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 7 o'clock, President Trump is said to be considering a range of options to acquire Greenland, including using military force. The White House says annexing the semi-autonomous region of Denmark is a national security priority. Yesterday, European leaders rallied behind Greenland, saying it belongs to its people. Former US ambassador to Denmark, Rufus Gifford, has told LBC, America's stance is confusing.
The whole point of NATO was an all-for-one, one-for-all kind of approach here. So the idea that we need Greenland for our national security to defend against some foreign power that is unarticulated, it doesn't make sense.
President Zelensky has praised European security guarantees for Ukraine in the event of a peace deal with Russia. British and French troops would help Kyiv defend itself from future attack and train its military. Keir Starmer is expected to be questioned by MPs about the details at Prime Minister's questions later. The UK Health Security Agency has extended an amber cold health alert for all regions of England until Sunday. The first named storm of the year, Goretti, is forecast to bring heavy snow to Wales and parts of England later this week. A major incident's been declared in Aberdeenshire as snow continues to grip the north of Scotland. Local Conservative MP Andrew Berry has told LBC the military should be brought in to help.
I'm fully aware the council are working as hard as they can and that there are other resources around Scotland in terms of mutual aid from other local authorities, etc., that can be called upon. But the fact is, right now, we're facing the very real risk of communities being completely cut off and individuals, the elderly, the infirm, the less mobile, unable to get those essential supplies.
This emerged, the government is spending £4 million a year on a prison it can't use. HMP Dartmoor hasn't been able to hold inmates since August 2024 after abnormal levels of a radioactive gas were detected. The Public Accounts Committee says ministers could be locked into a contract for the jail in Devon for another 8 years. The Ministry of Justice says it inherited a prisons crisis. And a minimum learning period of up to 6 months could be introduced for drivers in England and Wales. The proposal is reportedly part of the government's new road safety strategy, which is due to be published today. Other measures include lowering the drink drive limit and compulsory eye tests every 3 years for people over 70. In the city, the FTSE 100 will reopen later at 10,122. It closed up 118 yesterday. The pound buys $1.34 and €1.15. LBC weather largely dry with sunny spells today, lingering snow in the north and east of Scotland and the northeast of England. A high of 9 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
How would you describe McCain vibes?
I would reckon it's like a crisp and a chip. If they had a baby, do you know what I mean? I don't know about.
A chip and a crisp.
Combination.
It's got crisp ancestry, but it's a chip.
Like a hot chip crisp combo thingy? Yeah? Pure poetry, that was.
McCain vibes. Our chip crisp combo hot snack thingies in a freezer aisle near you.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Nick Ferrari at breakfast.
Good morning, 4 minutes after seven on Wednesday, January the 7th. So it's come to this. The British boots on the ground in Ukraine as part of a peacekeeping force, I hasten to add, in concert with our allies, the French. If you look at past involvement of British personnel, brave men and women, some of whom haven't returned from similar kind of operations, I'll be asking you, do you sense this is the right way forward? In other news, as highlighted a few moments ago, two separate police forces under attack. Indeed, the leader of the Conservative Party, leader of His Majesty's Opposition, Kemi Badenoch, is saying that the Chief Constable of the West Midlands should go for effectively allowing facts to be completely fabricated by the police and inventing football matches that didn't even take place. A pretty mealy-mouthed appearance by the Chief Constable in front of a panel of MPs. Meanwhile, the most extraordinary story, the police blunder, where a family spent 3 weeks grieving after being wrongly told their teenage son had died in a car crash, and another family had been told their son had survived, and he'd been dead. That lands at the door of South Yorkshire Police. Full details on that. And if we're talking of incompetent bosses, here, appearing in front of a panel of MPs yesterday, David Hinton, Chief Executive of South East Water, giving his firm an 8 out of 10 rating.
I'd give you three numbers, and I'd say 8 out of 10 in terms of response, I'd say 6 out of 10 in terms of communications, and I'd say 6 out of 10 in terms of the actual prevention of the event in the first place.
Well, I'll give you a number. He's one big drip. He's the boss of a water company that left people in and around Tunbridge Wells and other parts of Kent and Sussex no drinking water for 2 weeks. Time to batten down the hatches.
Storm Margaretti has been named by the French Met Service, but it will bring multiple hazards across southern parts of the UK through Thursday into Friday. I'm Claire Nazir, meteorologist, talking to Nick on the upcoming bad weather.
Plus, more on a story we discussed yesterday, although there are other elements. We very much looked at the idea of increased eye tests for drivers over 70. Well, there are other measures now in the Drive for Safety, including rules on drink driving and also trying to possibly license, in a sense, new drivers. Jack Cousins is from the AA. He says
there should be more thought about how we want people to move around the country, making sure that there is good public services and good public transport, particularly in those rural areas.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973. Text 84850. Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
In a major development yesterday, British Prime Minister Sir Keir Starmer signed a declaration of intent alongside French President Emmanuel Macron, committing Britain and France to providing troops on the ground in Ukraine to maintain peace. Speaking at a joint press conference in Paris yesterday, Sir Keir outlined details of the agreement.
This is a vital part of our ironclad commitment to stand with Ukraine for the long term. It paves the way for the legal framework under which British, French and partner forces could operate on Ukrainian soil, securing Ukraine's skies and seas and regenerating Ukraine's armed forces for the future.
And what of a major partner in NATO? Of course, busy now in Venezuela and possibly Greenland, the United States. Well, President Trump has been reluctant to publicly commit to providing a military backstop, but his special envoy, Steve Witkoff, speaking alongside Trump's son-in-law, Jared Kushner, who is advising the US government on diplomatic affairs, said the president will do whatever it takes to maintain peace in the region.
Jared and I are prepared to do anything necessary to work with our European colleagues. Prime Minister Starmer, you've been incredible, as has Chancellor Merz, and all of the European nations who we met today, who we spoke with. It's all been an important meeting today. And we think we've made a lot of progress. We are here to mediate and help in the peace process, and we're prepared to do anything necessary to get to that place. President Trump strongly, fervently believes that this killing has to stop, that the carnage has to stop. And we're determined, all of us up here, to be a part of that.
And also there, Ukraine's President Volodymyr Zelensky. Indeed, the three men clasped hands as various declarations were signed. Zelensky said,
we already have enough details and we know which countries will get involved and what each of them will contribute separately. And allow me to thank every leader who is willing to contribute to this peaceful solution.
To General Sir Richard Sheriff, who's former Deputy Supreme Commander of NATO in Europe and wrote the book War with Russia, so is well placed on many counts to comment on this. Sir Richard, thank you for your time. Level of nervousness this morning or totally comfortable? Good morning.
Good morning. Comfortable? No. Nervous? No. But realistic that there's not going to be a peace until Russia is forced into it. But at least now there is a clear plan from France and the UK to provide a reassurance force or an enforcement force. But it's got to be the right capability and it's got to have the right numbers, the means, and there's got to be a proper and capabilities.
Well, that's an interesting point because as a journalist, and you'll be far closer to it than I there, sir, but as a journalist, I read time and time again that, sadly, our military is being depleted. We might not have enough blokes and women and kit to actually do the job. How major a concern is that?
That is a concern. The British Army is and indeed more widely, Air Force and Navy, has been depleted. So you've got to work out what has got to be done, and then you've got to provide the means to do it. And at least now there's an intent to provide a reassurance force or get some boots on the ground. But it's got to be capable. And the reality is that unless there is, unless Russia is forced into this, the assumption must be anyway that Russia will break any ceasefire. And so such a force has got to be prepared to fight.
Sir Richard, what happens if I'm one of the brave military personnel who's part of this peacekeeping force and I or my colleagues are fired on by Russia? What are the rules of engagement?
This statement yesterday from the from Paris is pretty light on detail, and these are exactly the sort of things that need to be bottomed out. But the bottom line is also that if this can't be a lightly armed blueberry type peacekeeping or UN style. It's got to be prepared to enforce peace, and enforcing peace means being prepared to overmatch the Russians, and that means also being prepared to fight them if necessary.
So we could have British troops firing on Russian military personnel in Ukraine?
We could.
That's got to make you nervous, sir.
Yeah, it is, but it's realistic that there's not going to be a lasting peace until Russia is forced into it and forced to accept Ukraine as a sovereign state and Zelensky as president. And thus far, we've seen no indication at all that Russia is prepared to acquiesce with the discussions that we saw in Paris yesterday.
Having served as Deputy Supreme Commander of NATO, Sir Richard, why currently is it only the UK and France? We saw the German leader there, we saw a senior representative of the US, we saw Italian. Why are they not joining in?
Well, the statement talked about British, French and partners. We haven't seen the detail on the partners yet, but I think we have to assume that there will be other NATO partner nations involved in this.
Lastly, reminding listeners, you wrote the book War with Russia. How will this have gone down in the Kremlin?
Well, I don't think this will go like a lead balloon, because I don't think the Kremlin's prepared to accept, they've stated already they're not prepared to accept NATO troops. But it's not up to them to say whether they accept it. It's up to NATO, it's up to Europe, it's up to give Ukraine the support to force the Russians into accepting it.
Really enjoyed our time together. Thank you. Sir Richard Sheriff, as General, former Deputy Supreme Commander of NATO in Europe, and wrote War with Russia 12 after 7. Listen to that, Mark Almond, who's Historian, Director of the Crisis Research Institute in Oxford, regular columnist with the Daily Mail, and regularly helps us with matters such as these. Good to have you on again, Mark. So reminding everyone, of course, that you're a leading historian. Recent history shows that past adventures in countries such as Afghanistan and Iraq have not gone well. How easy is this going to be to sell to the British public? Good morning.
Well, that's very true. I think the basic problem here is that we have the keystone of the arch being put in place before the actual arch has been built. And as you say, the British public will have a lot of memory of people saying that deployment to Afghanistan would be without a shot being fired. Well, I'm afraid hundreds dead later, we know that that's not how these things go. And there will be all sorts of people, primarily the Russians, as Sir Richard Sherrett was saying, but maybe even the odd Ukrainian, who will want to cause trouble in order to drag the British and French and then the rest of NATO into a conflict which they will think is to their advantage.
You've had time to ruminate on it overnight.
As a historian, I would say, can you imagine the German public wanting to send German troops back to where they were slaughtered in the Second World War? We forget the Italians lost hundreds of thousands of troops fighting for Hitler in Russia too, and in Ukraine, on modern-day Ukraine. So there are traumas amongst our allies, historical traumas, that we, in regard to this particular territory, don't have. But we do have, of course, the recent experience of Afghanistan, Iraq, and of Northern Ireland, to show how peacekeeping and good intentions can go badly wrong.
So, overnight thoughts, views of opinions on yesterday's work in Paris, Mark?
Yeah, well, it's interesting and very important that the Americans have supported what the British and French and, by implication, the rest of the Europeans are saying. But the other issue that's haunting us, of course, is that on the other side of the Atlantic, President Trump has reiterated his determination to get hold of Greenland, which is something, of course, that will give great pleasure to the Russians and, more generally, opponents of the West, because it's going to split the Europeans from the Americans, or it will show that the Europeans can be pushed around. And therefore, if you're sitting in the Kremlin like Putin and hearing these declarations of a willingness to send a peace enforcement force, you will say, well, the Europeans don't seem able to enforce defending the territory of one of their own countries, Denmark and Greenland. Will they do that in Ukraine?
Lastly, do you sense the elastic band of NATO is a bit stretched at the moment?
Yes, indeed. Partly because ultimately Trump has shown that he sees all the allies as people who need to pay up, but also shut up. And the Americans, to some extent, say, do we need NATO as much as the Europeans in NATO and the Canadians need us?
Always good speaking with you. Mark, thank you. Have a happy new year. Mark Allmott, historian, director of the Crisis Research Institute in Oxford, regular columnist at the Daily Mail, regularly appearing here. Well, those are the questions set for you. As Mark Allmott rightly reminds us, we're going to Afghanistan, not a shot will be fired. Hundreds of military personnel did not return. Many hundreds more did with life-changing injuries and probably still suffering now, some of them. Do you buy it? Do you believe it? Why is it just the Brits and the French? Why no one else? And what if, as the general was saying, they get fired upon? What are they meant to do? Meanwhile, here's an exchange between Chief Constable of West Midlands Police Craig Guildford and Chair of the Home Affairs Select Committee Dame Karen Bradley over a wire report from his force outlining fears of vigilante groups targeting Maccabee fans was not shared with the committee.
I think this is the first time specifically that you've asked for that detail. That's what we tried to get across.
I think to be clear, we have wanted to get to the bottom of this and understand why the decision was taken that you did. And I don't think we should have to ask specifically for every single piece of information if you have things that you could give us that would assist us in this process.
And calls now, led by Kemi Badenoch, for that Chief Constable to plod off. 7:16 LBC News headlines, Dominic Ellis.
The White House says President Trump is discussing a range of options to acquire Greenland, including using military force. President Zelensky has praised European security guarantees for Ukraine in the event of a peace deal with Russia. And a minimum learning period of up to 6 months could be introduced for drivers in England and Wales. LBC weather largely dry with sunny spells today. Lingering snow for the north and east of Scotland and the northeast of England. A high of 9 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. There are delays on the M2 eastbound up to Junction 4 at Gillingham. There's been an accident and one lane is closed. Borough High Street remains closed both ways because of an ongoing police investigation. And also on the A10 at the M25 roundabout, a lorry's broken down actually on the roundabout itself. So definitely do expect delays. On the train, severe delays on the Elizabeth line between Paddington and Heathrow Airport. Also, Thames Link are suffering with some delays between St Pancras and Luton because the overnight works are still taking place. Now, there are problems on the underground this morning. There are minor delays on the central line because of a shortage of trains, and Covent Garden station remains closed because of a shortage of staff.
This is LBC.
Get sorted with full fiber deals from EE with the UK's best broadband technology.
Really?
Oh yeah, with non-stop browsing, gaming, and working made better with full fiber 150, and our most powerful Wi-Fi 7 technology is standard.
But I'm on another contract.
You're covered. We're the only major provider who'll give you up to £300 to switch.
That's a good start to the year.
Offer ends 29th of January.
Up to £300 credited to your EE account. Verify at ee.co.uk/claims. New customers, 62% UK availability. Terms apply.
Call Nick Ferrari now, 0345 6060973, LBC.
From London Gatwick, fly Singapore Airlines to Singapore and beyond. To the beauty of Bali, the warmth of Thailand, and the wonders of Vietnam, or many other Asian destinations. With daily flights and award-winning service, your next adventure starts here. Fares to Thailand starting from £614. Book your escape today at singaporeair.com. Offer ends 26th of January. Terms and conditions apply.
You know, people ask me, what's my good place? It's in the garden, playing football with my girls. It's also knowing that because my pension is with PensionBee, I get a beekeeper, a UK-based account manager for support should I need it.
You're not very good, Daddy.
At PensionBee, we believe that when your pension is in a good place, you're in a good place. Download the app or go to PensionBee.com and be pension confident when investing your capital is at risk.
When you're smiling.
Banning Dental Group Clinics. With over 5,000 top-rated Google reviews. Keep on smiling.
Whatever you're cooking up this year, Lidl has your back. From supporting your protein goal to your plant-powered lifestyle, enjoy up to 20% off our chilled high-protein and Vomondo plant-based ranges with Lidl Plus. So you can fuel your day your way. Lidl, more to value. 18 plus GB only, while stocks last. Terms apply. See lidl.co.uk/LPTV. Offer ends 14th of 1st, 26.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973.
19 after 7, come to your calls. It is British boots on the ground. I want to stress, in Ukraine, as part of a peacekeeping force, Jack, particularly keen to speak to you because you have military experience. Just quickly, some of the front pages you're waking up to. Gosh, it's interesting. I'm just thinking, if I had the role, which unbelievably I did, of editing a paper once, or deputy editor, which did you put on the front page? There are some huge stories around. So we've gone with this, the story concerning Ukraine, as have some of the papers. The front page of the Eye, boots on the ground, UK military bases in Ukraine, as has the Times, UK agrees to boots on the ground, and as has the Guardian, UK and France seal coalition deal to send troops to post-war Ukraine. The other big story, of course, is this change to driving stands, or driving laws, I should say. That's the front page of the Daily Mirror. That's the front page of the Sun, one for the road. Front page of the Daily Telegraph, drink drive changes to kill off rural pubs. We will be speaking with the government minister. I don't know that you can not bring in measures just so people can drive around the countryside drunk. But with pubs closing at the rate of one a day last year, anything that makes that tough is obviously a backward step. And lastly, this is another... I mean, again, what would you lead with? What would you put on your front page? The Daily Mail, police blunder to defy belief. This is the police telling the parents of a teenager he died in a car crash days before Christmas. He was actually alive in hospital. It took officers 3 weeks, 3 weeks, to realise they'd mixed up the identity of the survivor with his friend. So one family spent 3 weeks thinking their son had survived, and the other, well, you can do up the dots, thinking their son died. We'll give you a full report on that later in the show. Quickly to the LBC app. There you go. But here's another story. There you go. This is the European leaders vowing to defend Greenland, which, of course, again, is a very big story and one that has to be done. And lastly, the Sky News are also looking at the idea of these changes to various driving regulations. Right, let's get Jack and Romford in the conversation. Jack, you're on the radio. You are a military man, I understand. Good morning.
Hello, Mr. Ferrari. Yeah, I'm an ex-military myself. I've currently been out the forces for 10 years now.
How long are you in?
Just shy of 10 years, sir.
Did you enjoy it?
I did. I loved every moment of it.
Where were you deployed?
Afghanistan on my tours, thank you.
Right, OK. Well, that was where not one shot would be fired, and I imagine you saw something rather different, Jack.
A little bit, you could say, yes.
All right, are you okay? Did you come back all in one piece?
Yeah, all in one piece, sir.
Well done, sir. And all your mates come back all right?
That's a different story, Master, you know.
All right, we won't talk about that. Talk to me about Ukraine. You are brave enough to serve, as are some of your colleagues, and you see politicians sitting in Paris talking about great intent and forward ideas and togetherness and alliances. What's the reality for a bloke like you, Jack?
The thought of having British boots on the ground, Nick, in Ukraine, for me, I find is absolutely obscene. Considering the impact of what recent wars have had, especially on British men, the thought of having extras now put into Ukraine and the politicians like signing this agreement to go and do this, Macron and Starmer doing this. But what will happen is it will be the local boys that suffer. You wouldn't ever see a politician's son.
No.
Deployed out, and for them to explain, oh yeah, we can put British boots on the ground, it's not the same, because what the politicians are doing are sacrificing the average British individual, the average British boy that wants to serve his country, but now they're going to be sent over to a war zone that has been going on, excuse me if I'm wrong, I think 3 years, four years
right
now.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. What is the when you blokes and women get deployed, and you find yourself in Afghanistan or whatever, and you start talking, what's the general sense towards the people who make this? Because obviously you're a military bloke, so you're going to take, you know, an order, and you'll serve that order, you'll obey that order. But what do you say when you get back in the mess?
Well, when you kind of deploy it, Nick, you're under that. You're a young man. In my case, I was a young man, and you know, you joined the army. I joined the infantry. I wanted to, you know, serve my country in the best way that I knew how to. But once you are in there and the start, and it does hit the fan, that collective element is what bonds you together. Mm. But I believe that if you're going over to Ukraine, and I appreciate that, you know, Afghan was a lot of miles away, and the same as Ukraine, but there is no need for us to have boots on that ground. And I've had friends, and a lot of my friends have had friends pass away in Ukraine, and they went over there to fight the Russians themselves, and they haven't come home.
Right.
And you don't their families will never be looked after. And so why are we sending men to go fight a foreign war again? And it's just going to open up another can of another generation of men that are going to struggle mentally and not have the services they need when they come home. And my other issue with it is I just believe if these top politicians were so adamant on putting boots in the ground, let their sons go first.
I know. I hear what you say.
And you know,
on that subject, if you had kids or you had younger brothers or sisters and they said, Jack, I want to join the military, what would you say to them?
Absolutely not.
Why, sir?
Not in this climate. I have a 6-year-old little girl, and if she ever for me said, "Oh, Dad, I'm going to join the army," I'd do everything in my power to stop it, because I just know
you'd lock her in her bedroom.
Say again, sorry.
You'd lock her in her bedroom and not give her the key.
She wouldn't leave the house until she was 60. I promise you, it'd be like that, you know. But it worries me because I've got friends that have sons of age now, and if there is a deployment, it could go as far as conscription. Who knows for how bad things are going? Because everything, we're on lock with everything at the moment in this country.
And so what do you do? A military bloke with nearly 10 years of service. What are you doing now, just out of interest, Jack?
I'm a fire engineer.
Are you?
Fire alarm engineer, yeah. Not the greatest job in the world, but it pays the bills, you know?
I hear what you say. Thank you for your call. Thank you for your service. Look after your daughter. I sense you will. Jack, I think you probably speak for a lot of military personnel, and we'll take more calls on that in a moment. Robert, you'll be the next caller, 7:25. But let's look at other stories when we come home. Indeed, we come to part of Kent that I know quite well, and probably a little bit of Sussex too. Tunbridge Wells area, and a major water company boss giving himself and his staff a bewildering 8 out of 10 rating, even though residents were left without drinking water for 2 weeks. LBC's Benji Hire joins us from Tunbridge Wells, where in total around 24,000 homes and businesses were without the water. He joins me now. Benji.
Nick, good morning. A terrible outcome is how South East Water boss David Hinton described the nightmare endured by residents here. As you say, thousands of homes and businesses without drinking water for almost 2 weeks late last year, even after service resumed. For days, locals had to boil their water to ensure its safety. Well, yesterday, the company's boss was grilled by MPs on a select committee investigating the incident, and he started off by saying sorry.
I know how really, really inconvenient it is to not have water. It really disrupts everyday life on every level. And I know it's severely impacted them, and I'd really like to get that on record, that apology.
Mr. Hinton, who earns a base salary of £400,000, was criticised by MPs for his company's planning, resilience and communications. You might recall, Nick, that at the time he refused to appear in public or speak to the media. And it wasn't the first time either that South East Water experienced outages. It occurred back in 2022, 2023, multiple times last year as well. But when Mr. Hinton was asked what marks he'd give himself for his handling of the crisis, he replied with this.
Well, I'd give you three numbers, and I'd say 8 out of 10 in terms of response. I'd say 6 out of 10 in terms of communications, and I'd say 6 out of 10 in terms of the actual prevention of the event in the first place.
So that would be an A grade pass when I was at school in response, and a B grade pass for everything else.
Now, Dave Hinton's defence is that he claims this was avoidable. He blamed not having a backup chemical to help with the problem. He also blamed climate change and an uptick in demand because he says more people are working from home since the COVID-19 pandemic. That left the local Lib Dem MP gobsmacked. Mike Martin was actually busy yesterday sorting out yet another water outage here, but he did attend the hearing and was on Ian Dale's show last night.
There were several moments where there were audible gasps in the room, people's jaws dropped to the ground. When he resigns, because I think it's a matter of when, not if.
Because he's very angry with you, isn't he, for calling for him to...
Well, I don't care. He either misled the committee or he actually doesn't know what's going on.
As you can tell, Nick, there is serious bad blood between the two men. Dave Hinton accused Mike Martin of, quote, politicising the issue because the MP had the audacity to demand that compensation be paid to businesses that were pushed to the financial brink as a result of the turmoil during the festive period. The water boss called up the MP on the phone and asked him how he could sleep at night. And here is what Mr. Hinton told the committee regarding that spat between the pair.
It was a one-to-one conversation. It wasn't my finest moment, but all I'm prepared to say is the things Mike said to me elicited that kind of response, and I think the rest of it was a private conversation.
Dave Hinton, though, is vowing to remain in post and fix the pain his company caused. I wonder what locals might think about that, Nick. I'm actually off to speak to a few, and hopefully they've got their water back. The question I'll be asking them is, in the wake of the crisis in past weeks, how do they rate Dave Hinton? Do they rate what he rated himself?
Yeah, nice, absolutely. Let's get the scorecard from some local residents, Ben. You give them that rating, or get them to give him that rating out of 10. We'll come back to you in an hour or so. Let's see what the locals are saying, both businesses and, of course, residential. Benji High, OBC's reporter, joining us from Tunbridge Wells. Robert, you're not a million miles from Tunbridge Wells, actually. We will be speaking about Ukraine. Let's do it the other side of the news when I can give you a good run at it. Also coming up the other side of the news, what's being called this drive to safety. We did touch on that yesterday. New regulations and proposals being brought in. We talked a lot about the idea, of course, of increased eye tests, but there also could be breathalyzers possibly fitting what's called an alco lock to the car. That is only a possibility, I hasten to add. Tougher drink driving regulations probably on the way, but some are saying that could kill off rural pubs. Also after the news,
Storm Goretti has been named by the French Met Service, but it will bring multiple hazards across southern parts of the UK through Thursday into Friday. I'm Claire Nazir, meteorologist, talking to Nick on the upcoming bad weather.
Yeah, we'll help you get ready for Goretti. Stay tuned for that. 7.30, breakfast with me, Nick Ferraro on LBC. Let's get the news, Dominic Ellis.
The White House says President Trump is discussing options to take over Greenland, including military action. Mr. Trump says acquiring the semi-autonomous region of Denmark is a national security priority. Sir Keir Starmer is to face MPs for his first Prime Minister's questions later, since promising to deploy troops to Ukraine after any peace deal with Russia, along with France. Britain would also train the Ukrainian military. And cutting the drink drive limit in England and Wales is among government plans to improve road safety. Proposals include a minimum learning period for new drivers of up to 6 months before they can take a practical test. LBC weather largely dry with sunny spells today. Some lingering snow in the north and east of Scotland and the northeast of England. A high of 10 degrees.
Tom Swarbrick on LBC.
I would like to make 2026 the year of the pub, because I do not want to see this institution die. If it dies because no one goes, fine. If it dies because it's not profitable, because people are choosing not to do it in that way, then okay, that's a choice, so be it. Businesses have to wash their own face. But these changes are some of the ways in which this entire industry is just being killed without people even having a choice. It doesn't matter if a lot of people go, it still won't be profitable because of the tax changes made. That ain't fair.
Tom Swarbrick, Monday to Friday from 4 p.m. Listen on our free Global Player app or the new LBC app.
It might be cold outside, but things are really warming up at the Wren Winter Sale, with red-hot prices on our high-quality, fully-built kitchens and fitted bedrooms. Right now, there's up to 60% off fully-built kitchens and all bedroom units, plus up to 7 years interest-free credit, made for making you feel warm inside, whatever the weather. Wren, made for living. Visit your nearest Wren showroom. Offers apply when you buy 5 or more kitchen units or 3 or more bedroom units. Finance subject to status and minimum spend.
When you go abroad, everyone knows the best way to make yourself understood is to just say everything in English, but louder.
4 beers, please, garçon!
If only there was a way that could work with your advertising campaign. Well, there is. And you're listening to it. Because when you amplify your advertising with radio, 40 million listeners every week get the message. See radio differently at radiocentre.org.
Hi, I'm Andrew from New Zealand and Australia travel specialist, Travel Essence. For a tailor-made holiday unlike any other, find your way to us. Our local knowledge saves you time and money, and our experience is your guarantee of quality. We are also members of ABTA and ATOL. Amazing journeys down under start at travelessence.co.uk.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 606093.
7.33 is the time. Robert, you will be the next call. In fact, I'm just going to press a switch to make sure that I remind myself. Robert, you will be the next call on the idea of British boots on the ground as peacekeeping force. But, of course, as the general was saying, the former deputy supreme commander of NATO, what happens if those blokes and women get fired on? They don't return fire. Robert, you'll be the next caller. Into the world of finance. When I went through the front pages, I deliberately, as I often do, held one back, which is City AM. Their front page headline is Next Up, as in next, the retail store. Christian May, editor-in-chief at City AM, joins us now, and we're having a tour of the new house, because yesterday it was a study. This morning we find Christian, I imagine, in his kitchen, which has definitely got a touch of the small bones around it, and I think I recognise the Farrow and Ball paint. Christian May, good morning.
Good morning, Nick. Yeah, I'll try and go room by room.
Well, can you spare me the bathroom? Please, God, I don't need the bathroom.
All right, fair enough. Yeah, well, the kitchen is the only room in the house where the lights work at the moment, thanks to some building work going on. So, but we're making progress.
Well,
bit
done.
Like,
well done.
A bit like Next, the fantastic retail success story. People still refer to them as this great high street giants, and of course they are, but the key to their success has been online sales and indeed international expansion. That said, they had a very good Christmas period. A trading update issued yesterday saw their share price climb another 5% to some very punchy levels. Analysts very pleased with the results. UK sales growth beat the expectations of analysts, hitting just under 6% growth. And again, that was largely down to online shopping. It's actually a fraction of their revenue coming from physical stores. But their international sales have rocketed by 40%, and they had only been expecting about 25%. So Lord Wolfson, the great chief executive of Next at the helm.
He really is a city darling, isn't it? The city absolutely rave over this bloke, don't they?
I mean, he's for a number of reasons, Nick. I mean, he is fantastically good at his job in a retail sector, in a retail space. You and I often talk about retail businesses that are on the edge or on the brink, and Next is just bucking that trend, and it has done month after month, year after year. And the other reason that the city really likes Lord Wolfson is that the clarity with which they put out their financial results, often combined with some analysis of the state of the economy, sometimes even politics, and on which note they did point out yesterday that whilst they have a spring in their step, they are deeply concerned about rising unemployment in the UK. They feel that themselves as a retailer with a heavy headcount, of course, but also they expect unemployment increases to be felt in consumer confidence and consumer spending in the year ahead.
Let's move to other matters. What are the latest developments as regards the city, prices and oil in Venezuela?
Well, there's all sorts of dramatic subplots and spin-offs in Venezuela regarding the oil industry. You'll recall, of course, that the US placed an embargo around oil exports out of Venezuela in the run-up to their audacious raid on Nicolas Maduro. Some of those ships have been seized by the US, those tankers, and that were going to export what little oil Venezuela can get to at the moment. And one of which, I think, which is now turned tail and heading for Russia, possibly being pursued by US forces in the North Atlantic. So there's an exciting little subplot for you. But the big news overnight is that Donald Trump has said that he has struck a deal with the new government, I suppose, in Venezuela. He's going to sell all the oil they've currently got in tankers and in storage, I guess, to the US, much of which was bound for China. And we'll hear more and more about this, I expect, because China relied for quite a lot of a particular kind of oil that it craves from Venezuela. That tap is likely to be turned off, or at the very least now controlled by Donald Trump. But whilst energy leaders and indeed financiers are meeting White House officials to discuss how to reinvigorate Venezuela's oil industry, it's going to take some time and an awful lot of money to make the most of what they have in the ground there.
I can't be the only father who, having built an aircraft or a space rocket from Lego or any other construction, then goes like that. But why might that be coming to an end, Christian?
Well, I think this is possibly a reasonably controversial move. Well, indeed it is. It has set a bit of debate going. Lego, I mean, I'm at the stage, Nick, where my five-year-old daughter will run into the sitting room and show me an indeterminate mass of Lego bricks and announce that it's a palace.
Yes.
And, of course, as far as she's concerned,
probably
it is.
Probably based on your study by the look of yesterday, but do go on.
Yeah, plenty of inspiration around in this place at the moment. Well, Lego they're trying to strike the balance. They say they don't want to interfere with the magic of Lego, which is about children's imagination, or indeed Nick Ferrari's imagination. But they have nevertheless developed a smart Lego brick for their Star Wars collection, which looks like a normal Lego brick, but when moved in certain ways will make that sound that you just so ably produced yourself. And it has divided opinion. And a friend of your show, Jeremy Hunt, former Chancellor, who has said that he enjoys playing with Lego as a way to switch off his mind, has said that he won't be investing in what I think will be between 60 quid and 140 quid for the new Star Wars sets that feature these smart bricks, so that he won't be investing because, I guess, like you, he likes to make his own sound effects.
And good luck to him. Lastly, a City AM exclusive. It may be 35 miles from London, but it's known as London Luton Airport. What's happening up there?
Yeah, triumph of branding there. London Luton Airport, which does have, like a lot of airports, pretty punchy expansion plans, all backed by the Labour government. £2.5 billion proposal to increase its capacity from 18 million to 32 million by about 2040. Have said that that plan is going to have to be on hold because of the large increase in the business rates tax burden that they're going to face after Labour's reform to business rates. They're talking about a doubling of 7 million to 14 million pounds within a few years' time, and that's going to put pressure on their investment decisions, and they're not alone in that. Airports are facing huge bills, Heathrow in particular, but also Gatwick and others, and they're all of them saying, well, hang on a minute, this money's got to come from somewhere, and we're going to have to look at what we had planned to invest in. The government say that they're working with businesses across all sectors to sort of mitigate the impact of these rises, but the rises are coming and they're very substantial, and it's definitely going to give a bit of cause for concern and pause for thought among people who had perhaps planned to spend that money elsewhere.
Thanks for that. Look forward to seeing you in the scullery tomorrow. Christian May, editor-in-chief at City AM, as you take us on a video tour of your new abode. 7:40, Robert's in East Grinstead. Nervousness about troops going into Ukraine as peacekeepers. Morning, Robert.
Good morning, Nick. Happy New Year.
And to you, sir.
I always think that sometimes the most trivial points that I make that seem like jokes or seem like jokes are actually the most important points that I make. And, you know, it's sort of same with this one. I think if anyone is interested really in boots on the ground at the moment, I think they'd much, you know, be better placed to go to Snow and Rock in Chertsey and get themselves a good pair there and go hiking around Snowdonia, where I first heard Putin's announcement in his own words for a mission to secure peace in the Ukraine on the 22/02/2022.
Yep.
I think at the time, we're probably still retreating from Kabul, and if they'd had the same sort of nonsense of closing down gyms and banning leisure centres and whatever and restricting events, probably a lot of people coming over from Afghanistan thinking, oh my God, that's the Taliban's job.
Is this another military folly in your book, Robert?
Sorry?
Another military folly in your book?
If someone was firing, if I was out there and I was next to someone firing at me, or someone next to me was firing at someone else, I'm being serious here. I think the best move would be to grab a loudhailer and shout out, why are you firing at me? What do you want?
You're not being serious now, are you?
Yeah, I'm being serious.
Well, the Russian isn't going to know what you're talking about.
All right, Nick, I'm being very serious, and you ought to listen. I would listen to the people that want elections. Because Fakir, I think, has no interest, really, in real peace out there. If he wanted to make it...
That.
Well, he would have...
I'm happy to criticise him on most things, but I don't know about that, sir.
He would have raised the enlistment age. 70-year-old women were being armed in Ukraine in February 2022 out there. Okay? He's a joke. No. What's he going to do when he gets to Kiev, which changed its spelling? I know a Russian man... up the road, who's a lovely guy who works with a family. Our conversations about with the Ukraine over the last few years have lasted about under 3 minutes.
Right.
But I know that conflict has divided Russian and British couples, amazingly, in the same way that leaving the EU used to divide people.
Robert, I must move on. Thank you for your input. Much to consider. Don't know that I'm on the same page with all of it. Certainly not the idea of shouting at the Russians. But, Robert, let's see what others make of it. Thank you. 7:43. We've got a duty now. We've got to get you ready for Goretti. A storm is a-blowing in. Now, apparently it's got as cold as minus 12.5 in certain parts of the UK. That's just now. But what's in store? Claire Nazir, meteorologist and broadcaster, joins me now to explain. Good morning and Happy New Year, Claire.
Good morning. Happy New Year, Nick. Yes, things are changing. Now, we've seen about 0.5 metre of snow across the northeast of Scotland over the last few days. More snow to come today. Some communities have been cut off. But we look to the southwest, where an area of low pressure will deepen and strengthen through Thursday afternoon, bringing wet and windy weather, severe gales. Now, as this area of low pressure skirts along the south coast, bringing those very damaging winds, as the rain spews northwards and counters the cold air, it's likely to turn to snow. So we're calling this a multi-hazard event, whether it's heavy rain, snow, or those gales, severe gales. Now, it's been named by the French Met Service because the winds will be even stronger there. But even so, it's really batten down the hatches and realise if you are stepping out through Thursday night into the early hours of Friday morning across much of England and Wales, you could encounter some bad weather.
And how likely is this to go? How long is this likely to last, would you say, Claire?
Well, it's going to rattle across the country very quickly, pushing into France, into the first part of Friday. A legacy of snow and rain may cause problems on the rails and the roads. And then things calm down before we see more rain move in through Sunday, preceded by some snow. So not the end of the story yet, remaining cold.
Glenn Nazir, meteorologist and broadcaster, thanks for input. 744. Dale is in Shrivenham. Again, British boots on the ground. Dale, you're exporters as well, are you, sir? Good morning.
Yes, I am. Good morning, Nick.
Morning.
I just find it really ironic that you've got two leaders in Starmer and Macron willing to say they're going to protect Ukraine's borders, and both of them can't even protect our own borders.
Oh, that's a good point. Yeah, go on.
And, you know, thing is with Putin, he's got armour. We can't even stop rubber dinghies. You know, I'm ex-forces, and if they went for a conscript, I wouldn't want any my sons or anybody's children going protecting this country, because I've been there and a lot of forces have been there. We just get dumped once we've done our service and we're forgotten about.
Well, that's very much what Jack was saying, who's also ex-military. How many years did you serve, Dale?
5. I did 2 tours of Bosnia.
2 tours of Bosnia, right. If you had your time over, would you do it again?
I probably would, because my grandparents, my dad, but the thing is, I don't think I would now, because a lot of kids nowadays, they get offended by hurty words, so what are they going to be doing if someone's chucking bullets at them?
What are the rules of engagement? If you were a younger man and you find yourself in Ukraine and you get fired upon, presumably you can't fire back until authorised by your CO, is that right?
Yes. Yes.
Well, how does that make the blokes and women feel?
Well, I know. Well, you look at what's happened, you know, with the guys that served in Northern Ireland. You know, they're trying to get prosecuted.
Oh,
you know.
That is beyond outrage. So, I don't know whether you've got kids or nieces or nephews. Same question that I asked Jack. If any of them wanted to go into the Army, the Air Force, and what would your reaction be, Dale?
Absolutely not, because I look at it. This is a true fact. You can get all our armed forces in Wembley Stadium and still have 9,000 empty seats, and 30% of them are unfit for combat.
And there's the Prime Minister saying we're ready to take our role as peacekeeping force. Dale, thank you for your service. Thank you for your call. I have to move on. Coming up, thanks again, Dale. Coming up after the news, a drive for safety. And in the view of Chris and Nicole Taylor, their 18-year-old daughter died in a car accident.
It just feels like it's a delay excuse. They need to be brave.
We have to let young drivers on the roads on their own at some point, and therefore we need to protect them when that happens.
The 7:45 LBC News headlines now from Dominic Ellis.
The White House says President Trump is considering options to take over Greenland, including military action. Sir Keir Starmer is to face MPs for his first Prime Minister's questions since promising to deploy troops to Ukraine after any peace deal with Russia. And drivers in England and Wales could face a minimum learning period of up to 6 months under new plans to improve road safety. LBC weather, largely dry with sunny spells, lingering snow for large parts of Scotland and the northeast of England, a high of 10 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne, where Borough High Street remains closed both ways because of an ongoing police investigation. So definitely do expect delays. It is going to stay closed for some time. There are queues on the M2 eastbound to Junction 4 at Gillingham. That's because of an accident and one lane is closed. And it's very slow on the M11 southbound to Junction 7 at Harlow. And this is also after an accident. One lane is closed for recovery. On the trains, there are severe delays on the Elizabeth line between Paddington and Heathrow Airport. Also on the trains, Thamesley Link and East Midlands services are delayed by about 15 minutes between St Pancras and Luton because the overnight works finish late. And on the Underground, there are minor delays on the Central Line.
This is LBC.
MJ the Musical, the electrifying Olivier Award-winning hit, now in its final weeks. Featuring the jaw-dropping dance moves and legendary songs of Michael Jackson. Don't miss out. Book now at mjthemusical.com.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060973. This is LBC.
Whatever you're cooking up this year, Lidl has your back. From supporting your protein goal to your plant-powered lifestyle, enjoy up to 20% off our chilled high-protein and Vermondo plant-based ranges with Lidl Plus. So you can fuel your day your way. Lidl, more to value. 18+ GB only, while stocks last. Terms apply. See lidl.co.uk/lptv. Offer ends 14th of 1st, 2026.
Chase is the digital bank you can count on.
How so?
Because you get 1% cash back on your grocery shop.
Like on prosciutto?
Yeah, prosciutto.
And seaweed crackers?
Sure, those two.
Hang on, what about rotisserie chickens?
If it's in your grocery shop, Chase has got your cash back. Join today and get 1% cash back on debit card spending on groceries, fuel and everyday transport. Chase, see what your money can do. 18+ UK residents eligibility applies. 1% cash back for your first year. Maximum £15 per month. Exceptions apply.
There's so much more to enjoy when you fly in Emirates Economy. Spacious legroom, delicious regionally inspired meals, complimentary drinks, and with the latest movies, TV shows, music and live sport, some of the best entertainment in the skies. And our family services make your journey simple and fun. Plan your next trip and start the holiday early in Emirates Economy. Fly Emirates, fly better.
When you're smiling.
Banning Dental Group Clinics. With over 5,000 top-rated Google reviews. Keep on smiling.
On your marks, get set, go hybrid. The new Toyota Aygo Cross Hybrid. More oomph than a Friday feeling. And smoother than your last online date. More confidence, more go. In a new hybrid engine with 0% APR representative over 24 months. The new Toyota Aygo Cross Hybrid. Go on. Visit your local Toyota centre. Price from £21,595. Available on Toyota PCP when financed through Toyota Financial Services by 31st March 2026. Optional final payment indemnities may be required. See website conditions apply.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973.
9 to 8. Just a couple of social media coming in on this decision regarding the Ukraine. Jim says, Sakir's got it wrong again. No way should British troops be in Ukraine. Not in my name. Meanwhile, Tom says, I disagree with your veteran. I'm a veteran myself. One tour of Iraq. I would say if you can't use the army for a foreign war, what do you use it for? Especially one which will impact the future of Europe. Away from Europe, let's come to the United Kingdom and what's being called the biggest shake-up of road safety laws, possibly since Tony Blair's administration nearly 20 years ago, and addressing certain issues that haven't been addressed for nearly 60 years, or certainly more than half a century. Here with more details is the relevant Labour MP, Minister for Local Transport, Lillian Greenwood, joining me now. Good to have you on, Minister. We talked a lot about the idea of increased eye tests for those over 70, but that got a lot of publicity yesterday. There's a lot of other measures that you and your colleagues are putting forward. Can you run through some of those? Morning to you.
Yeah, so thanks, Nick, for having me on. We know that around 4 people every single day are killed on our roads, and progress on this has stalled over the last decade or more. And that's why we're bringing forward this road safety strategy today. And we're aiming to tackle some of the key things that present risk on our roads. So people with poor eyesight, as you've said, we know with more older drivers, we need to be sure people are safe to drive. We're also proposing a minimum learning period for young drivers. So we're consulting on that they would have to be learning for 3 or 6 months after their theory test before they would be eligible to take their driving test. We're consulting on what should be in the syllabus and should they have a required number of practice hours. We want to set people up for a lifetime of safe driving. And so as they're learning, we want them to experience different sorts of roads and different scenarios, driving at night, driving in adverse weather, so that we set them up so that they pass their test first time and that they're safe when they're out on the roads without an instructor or without, you know, a parent or guardian or someone supervising them.
Minister, what is the current average? You say 3 to 6 months. I'm trying to recall. It's a long, long time ago that I took my driving test, but I know when my birthday is. I think I came in at about 5 months. I mean, surely that is the average anyway, isn't it, Minister?
It does vary. You know, obviously some people will pass their driving test just weeks after their 17th birthday. Some people will take those intensive driving courses. We think it's a good idea to build up your skills and experience over a longer period. Particularly, you know, if you start driving in the summer months, we want people to experience driving late at night. We want them to experience driving when it's pouring with rain, because those things do feel different, and it's good to experience those when you're in a supervised, controlled environment rather than experiencing them for the first time when you've passed your test.
Well, let's talk about driving environments, Minister. Would you and your colleagues ever look at the idea of new drivers who've just passed the test being restricted? They can only have one other person in the car with them, or an age limit on the people they might be driving around. You're obviously thinking, or you know where I'm thinking, that a bunch of lads get in a car and sadly it can go tragically wrong.
Well, look, we absolutely have listened to campaigners who are calling for those sorts of forms of graduated driving licence. And it's a really difficult balance, because on the one hand, we want to protect young drivers. We know that they're at greater risk. But on the other, you know, we want to, as far as possible, ensure that they still have opportunities for work and education and social, you know, social opportunities. And we think that we've struck the right balance. We're calling for this minimum learning period. We're also proposing a lower drink drive limit for novice drivers. I absolutely accept that it might be, it's good advice, and I would say, and I said the same to my children, is, you know, don't get in a car with a group of your mates after you've been out to a party, because even if the person not driving who's driving, you know, hasn't had a drink, we don't want them to be put in that sort of high risk situation.
Minister, you say that you think you've struck the right balance. Not everyone is agreeing with you. Jonathan Neame, who's the chief executive of Shepherd Neame, which I'm sure you've heard of, it's Britain's oldest brewer, says this could be the death knell for rural pubs. That is supported by the British Beer and Pub Association. And even Nigel Farage chimes in and says it's a death knell. Pubs last year were closing at the rate of one a day. This could be more rural pubs closing, Minister.
Look, I don't want to stop people from going out and having a good night at the pub. What I'm saying is, if you're going to go out and have a drink, leave the car at home. You know,
But in rural areas, I know you're an MP for Nottingham South, which I'm sure is a very busy urban area, but you must be aware, Minister, in some instances, the nearest pub is a half an hour walk away.
Yeah, absolutely. And usually people are going out to the pub with their other half or with a group of friends. And what my suggestion would be is agree that one of you is going to be the designated driver, or, you know, go to the pub and have a low alcohol or zero alcohol drink. Many of our most famous brands now produce a zero alcohol version. Lots of pubs, you know, are producing mocktails, things that feel like you're having a grown-up drink, but a zero alcohol. What I come back to, Nick, is the 260 people last year who were killed by a drink driver. That is totally preventable. And what I'd say to Nigel Farage is sit down with the families that I've sat down with, whose lives have been absolutely devastated, torn apart when a member of their family has been killed by a drink driver. We don't want anyone to be getting behind the wheel of a vehicle when they've had too much alcohol, and that's what we're determined to tackle.
Minister, on the subject of safety, I'm sure you're also aware of the incidents involving e-bikes and e-scooters. Indeed, there is a case going before the courts. I stress again, a case going before the courts where it is alleged that an 86-year-old woman was killed by someone on an e-bike. What we do know is that figures in 2024 tell us that there are a total 444 people seriously injured. Six people were killed in collisions with e-scooters. Similar night for e-bicycles as well. 11,000 incidents, 400 of which were serious. What about cracking down on the scourge of e-bikes and e-scooters, Minister?
Well, look, everyone who's on a vehicle, including e-bikes and e-scooters, needs to obey the rules of the road, needs to be respectful of other road users, and needs to act in a responsible manner. So some of the people who are riding e-bikes will be riding illegal e-bikes. Obviously, e-scooters, it's only the ones that are part of our trials.
But are you confident you're cracking down on those, that police authorities... Police forces are cracking down on those, Minister?
Well, I mean, I've had precisely that conversation with our police force in Nottinghamshire, because I've been concerned that we're seeing some people riding e-bikes and e-scooters on pavements, which they shouldn't be, or riding at too great a speed, where there's some illegal e-bikes, which are effectively an electric motorbike, not a legal electrically pedal-assisted e-bikes. And absolutely, you know, police authorities or police forces already have the powers that they need to seize those bikes and to take action. And I do hope that, like in Nottinghamshire, they will take action to take those people off the roads when they're acting in a dangerous and antisocial way.
Lastly, we're having our conversation on today. It's been revealed that South Yorkshire Police allowed one family to spend 3 weeks grieving after being wrongly told their teenage son had died in a car crash, a sort of incident that you and I were discussing there. And a second family of their town were told their son had survived. He was actually dead. South Yorkshire Police Chief Constable has to quit his job, doesn't he?
Well, I mean, obviously, that's the first I'm hearing.
It's the front page of some of the papers. It's appalling. I mean, as a parent, you cannot imagine the grief they're going through.
No, I can't. I mean, as I said to you, over the last 18 months, I've sat down with numerous bereaved families, and you know, I can't even begin to imagine how that must have felt for those families. It's just appalling.
All right. Safe driving. Final question. Did you pass your test first time, Minister?
I didn't. I passed it second time, Nick.
All right. Well done. I'm slightly ahead of you on that one. Thanks, Lillian Greenwood, Minister for Local Transport, outlining exactly what those measures will mean. The music means we must move on. And coming up after news, we will go back to that idea, particularly if you are living in a rural area. I mean, there are things called taxis, and there are things called low alcohol or no alcohol drinks. So is it right that rural areas are complaining so much? Plus, people having to turn to crowdfunding to pay for their funerals. And what is President Trump doing?
When she gets in the... dropped the thing, walks off the stage crying, her mother's crying, her father's crying.
Well, he's always worth a laugh, but what exactly is he talking about? The answer to those questions and more will follow the 8 o'clock news on LBC.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom, the White House says President Trump is considering options to take over Greenland, including military action. Mr. Trump says acquiring the semi-autonomous region of Denmark is a national security priority. That's in spite of objections from his European allies, including Sir Keir Starmer. LBC's Washington correspondent Simon Marks is following developments.
It is clear that they have decided to do this partly because they've seen what was taking place in Paris. This is a president utterly unconstrained and absolutely determined that he is going to mould the world to his vision, and that the United States is going to absolutely be dominant in the Western Hemisphere, and certainly dominant in terms of its relationship with Europe.
President Zelensky has praised European security guarantees for Ukraine in the event of a peace deal with Russia. British and French troops would help Kyiv defend itself from future attack and train its military. General Sir Richard Sheriff is a former deputy supreme commander of NATO in Europe. He's told Nick any assembled force has to be prepared to fight.
And enforcing peace means being prepared to overmatch the Russians, and that means also being prepared to fight them if necessary.
So we could have British troops firing on Russian military personnel in Ukraine?
We could.
That's got to make you nervous, sir.
Yeah, It is, but it's realistic that there's not going to be a lasting peace until Russia is forced into it.
The UK Health Security Agency has extended an amber cold health alert for all regions of England until Sunday. The first named storm of the year, Goretti, is forecast to bring heavy snow to Wales and parts of England later this week. Learner drivers in England and Wales could have to wait up to 6 months between sitting their theory and practical tests. The proposal is part of the government's new road safety strategy. The plans will be subject to consultation. Transport Minister Lillian Greenwood has been outlining the plans with Nick.
We think it's a good idea to build up your skills and experience over a longer period. Particularly, you know, if you start driving in the summer months, we want people to experience driving late at night. We want them to experience driving when it's pouring with rain, because those things do feel different. And it's good to experience those when you're in a supervised, controlled environment rather than experiencing them for the first time when you've passed your test.
And England cricketer Jacob Bethell's ended the penultimate day of the final Ashes test against Australia on 142 not out. The tourists closed on 302 for 8 in Sydney, a lead of 119 runs as they look to end a disappointing series on a high. In the city, the FTSE 100 had just reopened at 10,122. It closed up 118 yesterday. The pound buys $1.34 and a euro 15. LBC weather, largely dry with sunny spells today. Lingering snow continuing for large parts of Scotland and the northeast of England. A high of 10 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
It's the last chance to get yourself a ticket for tonight's Lotto draw.
It could be you.
Lotto. From the National Lottery. Rules and procedures apply. Players must be 18 or over.
This is LBC from Global. Leading Britain's conversation with Nick Ferrari at breakfast.
Good morning, 4 minutes after 8, Wednesday, January the 7th. It's a drive for safety on our roads, incorporating and encompassing young drivers and older drivers. Drink limits as well, but what of the menace, the scourge of e-bikes and e-scooters, as I put to the minister? Of course, she said all the right things, but do you really believe there will be that crackdown? People lose their lives each year, at least double digits. People lose their lives in collisions with e-bikes and e-scooters, but not a word about them. Is that rather a glaring omission? Plus one big drip. The boss of the water company down in Tunbridge Wells gave himself an 8 out of 10 rating for his stewardship of a crisis that left more than 20,000 homes and businesses without drinking water for 2 weeks. LBC's Benji Hire has been touring the streets looking for angry of Tunbridge Wells.
Boss of South East Water rated himself 8 out of 10 in his response to the crisis. What out of 10 would you give him?
Zero. Went down for 2 weeks in December and is down again. They said he'd be back yesterday afternoon. No shower, no water, nothing.
Plus, the wrong arm of the law, part one. Assistant Chief Constable of West Midlands Police, Mike O'Hara, speaking yesterday in front of a panel of MPs.
The challenge around risk decision-making is public safety has got to be at the heart of it. So, again, I understand the frustration, but there is no conspiracy here. This was a decision based on safety.
Absolute lies. Utter tosh after they made up. This is the police fabricated a football match that didn't even take place. And the wrong arm of the law, part two.
The family of a teenager are wrongly told that he died in a car crash, only to find out 3 weeks later. I'm Alex Taylor-Brown with the story.
So surely it's time for the respective chief constables of West Midlands and South Yorkshire to plod off.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060 973. Text 84850. Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
It's a difficult balancing act, isn't it, for the government? This was a government that was elected, of course, promising growth, and it's by virtually every possible metric they've gone the other way. And you'll know if you live in a rural area, as in which I grew up, I don't live in now, that the pub is absolute centre point of much of rural Britain, actually. Now, pubs have been closing in England and Wales at the rate of one a day last year. One a day. So the idea now that they're going to bring down the level of alcohol which you can safely drive without fearing prosecution is a concern. Now, let me get this straight, I'll get it right. I am not for one moment suggesting that because you live in the countryside you should be able to drive around the various lanes and hedgerows and God knows where roaring drunk. Of course I'm not. But is there a real danger here? Now, in the previous 15 minutes of the show, I spoke with the Minister for Local Transport, Lillian Greenwood, who laid out some of the government's plans.
We're aiming to tackle some of the key things that present risk on our roads. So people with poor eyesight, as you've said, we know with more older drivers, we need to be sure people are safe to drive. We're also proposing a minimum learning period for young drivers. So we're consulting on that they would have to be learning for 3 or 6 months after their theory test before they would be eligible to take their driving test. We're consulting on what should be in the syllabus and should they have a required number of practice hours. We want to set people up for a lifetime of safe driving, and so as they're learning we want them to experience different sorts of roads and different scenarios, driving at night, driving in adverse weather, so that we set them up so that they pass their test first time and that they're safe when they're out on the roads.
Let's drill down a little bit more to this drink drive limit. So the idea that in England, Wales and Northern Ireland, it's currently 35 micrograms of alcohol per 100 millilitre of breath. I know, it's difficult, isn't it? But that's been around since 1967. As part of the government's proposals, it would come down to 22 micrograms of alcohol. Now, that would put it in line with Scotland, and I have to say most, or certainly a lot, of Europe as well. But I did ask the minister, would this be, as many are saying, the death knell to rural pubs?
Look, I don't want to stop people from going out and having a good night at the pub. What I'm saying is if you're going to go out and have a drink, leave the car at home, you know,
but,
maybe...
But in rural areas, I note you're an MP for Nottingham South, which I'm sure is a very busy urban area, but you must be aware, Minister, in some instances, the nearest pub is a half an hour walk away.
Yeah, absolutely. And usually people are going out to the pub with their other half or with a group of friends. And what my suggestion would be is agree that one of you is going to be the designated driver, or, you know, go to the pub and have a low alcohol or zero alcohol drink. Many of our most famous brands now produce a zero alcohol version. Lots of pubs, you know, are producing mocktails, things that feel like you're having a grown-up drink, but a zero alcohol. What I come back to, Nick, is the 260 people last year who were killed by a drink driver. That is totally preventable. And what I'd say to Nigel Farage is sit down with the families that I've sat down with whose lives have been absolutely devastated, torn apart when a member of their family has been killed by a drink driver. We don't want anyone to be getting behind the wheel of a vehicle when they've had too much alcohol, and that's what we're determined to tackle.
That's Minister for Local Transport, Lillian Greenwood. Let's bring to the conversation Andy Lennox. Now, Andy, at one point last year, probably became the second best-known publican in the whole of the country after Jeremy Clarkson. He's the landlord at the Old Thatch Pub in Dorset and the Old Beams Inn in Ibsley, Hampshire, where he pioneered the No Labour MP stickers campaign, the first pub to start that. And indeed, we spoke at the time. He joins me again now. Andy, good to have you on. Trust business was good over the Christmas period, or as good as it can be. How much concern would you have over these measures coming in? Good morning to you.
Good morning. How are you doing?
I'm well. What about you? What about business?
Good. Yeah, business was okay. It was okay. It was probably enough to get us through to February. But, you know, obviously the dark water's done. We're in the dark water now, so. And, you know, again, we're in, you know, full campaigning mode. Or back into it. And, you know, things like, for example, this pint and this, again, some of the licensing piece that they're looking to change. And I completely agree with you. Nobody wants drink driving.
Nope.
You know, nobody wants any deaths on the road or anything like that. But at 22 milligrams, you know, you can't have a pint. So what, you know, and this is one of the big things around the Labour, No Labour MP campaign. You know, rural pubs, these pubs that are in the middle of, you know, in villages, you know, they are the lifeblood, they are the part of the community that really is the last bit left. The post office is gone, the, you know, all, you know, and one of the things that we're looking at the moment is, you know, the King's campaign, which is, you know, this, the pub for a hub, the pub is the hub.
Mm-hmm.
That's all about rural pubs.
But Andy, the minister would say, hang on, you can have low or no alcohol beer, you can have a Coca-Cola or a Pepsi, you can have a taxi, you can have a designated driver. Andy?
Yeah, you can, and that's absolutely fine. But, you know, if you've got an elderly or, you know, a lonely person who wants to go to the pub and have a pint and then, you know, go home and actually experience a bit of social, you know, network and a bit of social interaction, that won't be able to happen because he won't be able to go. And nobody's saying that basically, you know, you should have three or four pints or, no. You know, or anything like that. But having a pint at the pub is pretty much the kind of part of the fabric of our society. And again, it's just overreach. Again, you know, licensing, you know, they're talking about licensing changes at the moment. This is an unhelpful one, so I don't know really where it's come from. But again, you know, overreach of government, it's not needed.
Lastly, does 2026 look like on the pub front nationally, Andy?
Well, I mean, it's gearing up a lot at the moment. Obviously, you're hearing that basically Keir Starmer and Rachel Reeves are at loggerheads over, you know, what kind of relief that can be given. I do believe that there will be some kind of rates relief put in place. We are pushing massively for a VAT cut in line with Europe. And, you know, actually all the trade bodies and a lot of the bigger organisations are now starting to organise for proper industrial action. So it's going to be a really, really interesting time. I know that there's a process planned for the end of the month. Okay. And we're looking into some major kind of industrial action now.
Keep us tuned with what you've got in plan. Stay in touch and we will definitely feature you again as and when this comes up later in the month. Andy Lennox, thank you. He started the No Labour MP stickers campaign. He's got the old Beams Inn in Ibsley, Hampshire, and the old Thatch Pub in Dorset. Let's expand the conversation. Thanks, Andy. 14 after 8. Let's expand the conversation a little. Richard Owen is road safety expert and chief executive of Agilisys Road Consultancy. They specialise in transport, safety, data and behaviour change. And he joins me now. Let's move a little bit away from the alcohol, if we can, Mr. Owen, and talk about younger drivers, because you'll probably be aware that they account for 6% of motorists and 24% of accidents. Shouldn't we be focusing on them equally with drinkers and older people? Morning.
Morning. Yeah, I think young drivers is one of the topics that a lot of us in the industry have been focusing on over the last few years, you know, lobbying for some changes. And while there have been some changes, you know, we're looking at this 6-month required learning period, which I think is going to be great. And that's assuming that you can actually book a driving test, of course. There's, you know, the post-test measures, the ones restricting, you know, driving around at night with your friends in the car. They're not coming in, and that's a disappointment to quite a few people. But I think, you know, looking at what they've done, they've balanced off quite a lot of areas in road safety, and it is good to actually have a strategy for once.
Yeah, they have. You're absolutely right, Richard. But can I talk to you about e-scooters and e-bikes? 11,266 incidents in 2024, the last year for which full figures are available. A case going before the courts, I stress going before the courts, in which it is alleged that an 86-year-old woman lost her life. We can definitely say the number of lives in 2024 is in double figures. Not a word about... Now, again, I appreciate this is more of a city or town issue, but surely that should have somehow featured. Richard.
Yeah, am I surprised that it wasn't included in there? I think the government has got an issue with e-scooters. You know, they've been stuck in this trial legislation, whereas, you know, private e-scooter use is still illegal, but millions of them are sold every year. I think they do need to seriously tackle the legislative problem associated with e-scooters, first of all, because it almost precludes them from carrying out any action, any education campaigns, because they just turn around and say, well, they're illegal, aren't they? You shouldn't be using them. But the reality is that people are, so they definitely need to move on e-scooters and then tackle them. And you know, the high powered e-bikes that we see on the roads, you know, the scourge of many urban areas, the police do crack down on them, but there are only so many police. And you know, what I would have loved to have seen within the strategy is definitely more commitment for funding for traffic officers.
Okay, lastly, the minister said that they want to look at this sort of 3 to 6 months for new drivers. I worked out it was almost 6 months to the day after my 17th birthday that I passed my driving test. I'm about to ask my listeners how long it took them. From memory, assuming you've passed your driving test, can you recall how many months you were learning?
10.5 months.
10.5. Okay, thanks very much, Richard. Richard Owen, road safety expert, chief executive of Agilisys Road Consultancy. Can you honestly ring me and tell me that you passed your test within weeks of your birthday? I mean, surely no one really gets in within 3 months, do they? We'll take your calls on that. And, of course, the broad thrust of the idea of an attack on rural areas. And you remember at the start of the show, we were talking about the idiot boss of Southeastern Water, David Hinton, who gave himself a rating 8 out of 10 for the stewardship of that crisis towards the end of the last year that left 24,000 businesses and residences in and around Tunbridge Wells in Kent without drinking water for 2 weeks. Well, our reporter's been finding out what the good folk of that town think.
I'll give him a very low rating for sure. Out of 10, I would give him a 4.
Would have given him a lot less than that. Probably a 4.
Zero?
Yeah.
Well, it's appalling, isn't it?
Yes, angry of Tunbridge Wells. We found him. 8:17, LBC News headlines. Dominic Ellis.
The White House says President Trump is considering options, including military action, to acquire Greenland. Sir Keir Starmer says the hardest yards are still ahead after promising to deploy British troops in Ukraine in the event of a peace deal. And learner drivers in England and Wales could have to wait up to 6 months between sitting their theory and practical tests. LBC weather, largely dry with sunny spells, lingering snow for large parts of Scotland and the northeast of England, a high of 10 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne. We're very slow on the M25 clockwise to Junction 6 at Godson. It's because a car broke down earlier, has now been recovered, so all the lanes are open, but it's still very slow. Now, delays continue in Borough and around Elephant and Castle because of two separate problems. So firstly, Borough High Street is closed both ways because of an ongoing investigation. And then right near to the Elephant and Castle, the New Kent Road is closed eastbound, and that's following an accident, and that's also extremely busy on the approach. On the A10, there are southbound queues to the M25 junction. That's where a lorry has broken down. And on the trains, well, severe delays continue for the Elizabeth line between Paddington and Heathrow Airport. On the underground, the Piccadilly line's just been suspended between Acton Town and Uxbridge.
This is LBC.
Chase is the digital bank you can count on.
How so?
Because you get 1% cash back on your grocery shop.
Like on prosciutto?
Yeah, prosciutto.
And seaweed crackers?
Sure, those two.
Well, hang on, what about rotisserie chickens?
If it's in your grocery shop, Chase has got your cash back. Join today and get 1% cash back on debit card spending on groceries, fuel and everyday transport. Chase, see what your money can do. 18 plus UK residents eligibility applies. 1% cash back for your first year. Maximum £15 per month. Exceptions apply.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060973. LBC.
Business healthcare. Sounds pricey.
At Benenden Health, it's less than £16 per employee per month, which...
will go up when people use it.
Actually, no. We don't do price hikes each time our services are used. Just
medical questionnaires for everyone.
No. And it's quick and easy to join.
Sounds great. I'm in.
Benenden Health. Healthcare done different. Fee review periodically. T's and C's apply. Selected surgical procedures. Immediate access for businesses. Wait periods apply for personal membership. UK only. Visit benenden.co.uk.
Right then. Who's all in for Cancer Research UK's Race for Life? Anglers, ramblers, climbers, five-a-siders, surfers, gamers, bikers, hang gliders.
Book clubbers.
Are we up for it? Let's go all in against cancer. All in to help fund life-saving research. Sign up now and save 30% off entry to your local 3K, 5K, 10K or Pretty Muddy event. Search Race for Life. Discount ends January 31st, 2026. T's and C's apply.
Train to Chichester. Flasks filled, snacks packed, all ready for Maisie's first stargazing adventure.
Come on, Maisie. Follow everyone up to the top of that hill.
Oh, look, that one's the plough.
Shooting star! Oh, wow!
Oh, made it. Last train back and feeling cosmic. And it seems we have an astronaut in the making. Download the Southern Railway app to book kids' tickets for £2 on off-peak journeys. Southern Railway, where every stop is a story.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973.
Coming to you, Rebecca, you'll be the first caller. 8:21 is the time. Christopher says that minister is having a laugh. Come to London, spend 30 minutes in the city. The number of illegal scooters, e-bikes on pavements, zero law enforcement. I'm asking how quickly you passed your test. June in Tunbridge, I passed it 3 months, 19 days after my birthday. I've never had a point on my licence in 59 years of driving. Well, I thought I did quite well in nearly 6 months. Well done to you. Rebecca's in Wandsworth. Rebecca, what aspect do you want to discuss? Good morning.
Hi.
Hello.
I just wanted to discuss the fact that e-bikes and e-scooters are just so dangerous.
Yes, I agree.
And that the legislation is just simply not caught up with...
Well, it's non-existent, Rebecca.
In London.
It's non-existent.
So So I just set up a petition based on the fact that a close friend of ours had one of their children who had a huge accident in London and is recovering from a brain injury.
Oh, good Lord, I'm so sorry.
And the
what were the circumstances?
The petition I wanted to talk about was just to improve legislation. Mm-hmm. I've only got 129 signatures, but it's to make helmets mandatory.
Right.
It's to introduce drink drug limits. It's to raise the minimum age for youth to 18, which is not happening today.
What are the circumstances of the case, e-bike. Rebecca? What were the circumstances of the case that motivated you to do this?
Just having seen loads of dangerous activity across London, a neighbour had a collision with a car. People are riding around London primarily, like pretty much always, without helmets.
Yep.
Often dangerously on pavement.
I agree.
They're very heavy vehicles. There's something called line bike leg in A&E, which is essentially when the femur is completely crushed.
Oh, good grief.
Because these line bikes are so heavy, and it's not just that particular company.
No, there's Forrest out there as well. Rebecca, good luck with the petition you're putting together. I was absolutely shocking, but I think it's something called velocity, isn't it? Mass and speed. So by the time you got that, if you've got someone on a bike which is heavy, perhaps someone who's heavy, travelling at speed, 20 miles an hour, you get hit by one of those. Rebecca, good luck with your campaign. Andy's in Wellingborough. Andy, what do you want to say to this? Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. Good to speak to you again. It's been a while.
Yes, good to have you on again.
I'm coming at this from a different angle around the safety and the consistency in message from the government. Now, I've not got an issue here about the messages around drink driving and the right thing to do, but I'm looking at safety in a broader context here, Nick. So there have been many changes to licences over the last 2 or 3 years. So I don't know whether you're aware, but the most recent one is with zero emission vehicles.
Right.
If you pass your test today at 18, 17, you know, you can now get into a 4.25-ton van and hit the road. Now, I would argue, without specific training, because you don't need training for that now, Nick.
Right.
You can just go out and do it. That can be as unsafe as not having the early experience in your driving. And for me, that is a bigger issue. Likewise, with towing caravans, licences were expanded a couple of years ago. So again, anyone can hook the caravan up on the back and go, and you can be up to 7 tons of vehicle on the road.
Yeah.
So for me, what is this really about? I think this is about smoothing out the backlog of driving tests. I think there's a hidden agenda here. I don't really buy the whole safety message when other messages are coming out from government right now. Now, I say this as a motorhome owner, Nick, and I've been speaking to Simon Lightwood and my local MP, Lee Barron, about this. I'm approaching 50. I drive a motorhome. My partner is 41. He can't drive that motorhome because it's just over 3.5 tons. But we've got lots of years of driving experience behind us. But a new driver can go straight into a 4.5-ton vehicle. And that in itself can be just as unsafe. So I welcome that they are trying to do something. I think the messages around drink driving are absolutely right. I live in a rural area. It's a taxi every time if I want to go to the local town. You know, that's the thing to do. But I think there is more to scope out here around safety.
Just lastly, you mentioned rural areas. Lastly, do you have any sympathy for publicans and beer associations who are saying this will be the death knell of the pub? Because as you rightly say, you can have a DD, a designated driver. You can. I appreciate you won't get taxis everywhere and they are expensive. Or there is something called a soft drink.
Absolutely. And you know, as a driving licence holder, you have that responsibility. So I don't have the sympathy for the publicans in that sense. You, as the owner of that driving licence, have the responsibility to do the right thing here.
Safe driving to you and your partner, Andy. Thank you. It's a good point you make about how, having passed your test, you can suddenly get in some pretty hefty vehicles. Andy, got to move on. Best wishes to him. Safe driving. So many people want their say on this. Elizabeth in Crawley. Now, we're talking, how quickly did your daughter pass her driving test?
Hello, hi. My eldest daughter passed 3 months and 3 days.
That's pretty impressive. That is pretty impressive. And how's her driving record been since?
Oh, well, on the speeding front, not very good. But regarding the driving quickly, she had lessons, but also my husband and I would take her out nearly every evening.
Did you really? Okay.
Not to get her to pass the test, just to help her with the driving, and we said we can't get
you through
the test.
Were you comfortable 3 months? A lot of people say, and I mean, it's a long time, obviously, since I, but they do need to, young people, they need to perhaps learn a bit more about driving in the rain, driving at night, driving on motorways, driving in certain conditions, or were you totally comfortable that your daughter had mastered it all?
We took her to a car park, first of all, so we were comfortable with her driving and positioning on the road and whatever. We couldn't take her on the motorway, only the instructor can.
Yeah, sure.
But no, it was. I dreaded it because I thought we're going to argue, it's going to be awful, but it was actually really enjoyable, really funny. It was really, really enjoyable, but my second daughter, it wasn't the same.
Ah, has she passed?
She's passed now. She took her 10 months.
Okay.
That's the other thing I wanted to say. You know, you often talk about driving tests and how hard they are to get.
Mm.
My second daughter last year booked a test for December, January and February. She passed third time.
Right.
And it is quite easy to get a test if you're prepared to sit on their site and wait for cancellations.
Okay. All right. Lastly, these measures, when your daughter, well, when they both passed, did you say, I want you to restrict the number of girlfriends you have in the car or a number of mates you have in the car? Did you take any measures such as that?
They're actually both really sensible on that front.
Yeah.
So, yeah. And my husband's a police officer and they're really, as much as the eldest has been caught speeding, they're very sensible regarding alcohol. They don't go out and drink.
How did Dad react when his daughter was done for speeding?
Oh, I probably reacted worse, actually. But we just said to her, you're a fool. You're an idiot. We know you like speed, but if you want to keep your license, because within the first 2 years, if they get caught, they can lose their license.
Oh,
she's over
right?
the 2 years. Yeah, she's over the 2 years now. But, you know, we've just said to her blatantly, you keep getting caught, you'll lose your license.
Safe driving to all of them, Elizabeth. Thank you. Colin's in Manchester. Colin, your view of young people and driving. Good morning.
Good morning. In my opinion, and you probably get a lot of objections with this, is the driving instructors, they teach people how to pass a test, not how to drive. They go around the test circuits that they know that they're going to put the student to.
Yep.
And then they memorise that circuit, and they know every bend, every
junction.
So what
should they do, Colin?
Positioning. Well, I'll tell you what I had to do. I went to a driving school in a place called Leckenfield, and it was an old airfield, RAF base back in the day. And that RAF base obviously had a runway,
yeah,
which was and the whole base was turned into everything that you would experience on the road. So you had your
traffic lights. Well, not a
motorway. Well, on the runway. Nick, was turned into a dual carriageway.
Yeah, but they wouldn't have the same level of traffic, surely, unless...
No. Well, actually, there were thousands of people that went through Leckenfield, if you look it up.
Oh, right. But what, all driving, at the same time?
Yep. It was... If you look it up, Nick, Leckenfield, it's near Hull.
Okay.
If you Google it, it's actually the... it used to be the British Army, and now...
So what you're saying is that in a sense, and it's not the fault of the young people. The instructors know the route, so they drive them round and around wherever it might be. I don't know, Catford, if there's a centre there, and they don't actually learn the reality of the road.
No, and they don't go on the motorways either.
No, that is key, I think. They don't go. Obviously, they don't go in the dark and in bad weather. Colin, I'm already late to the news. Thank you for telling me about Leckenfield. People will be looking that up without doubt. Colin, safe driving to you, Vicky. You're going to be talking about that, and coming up later in the show, what on earth is President Trump doing?
Once he gets in the... dropped the thing, walks off the stage crying, her mother's crying, her father's crying.
Stay tuned to find out. 8:31, breakfast with me, Nick Ferrara, and LBC News Headlines, Dominic Ellis.
The White House says President Trump is considering options, including military action, to acquire Greenland. Mr. Trump says annexing the semi-autonomous region of Denmark is a national security priority. Sir Keir Starmer says the hardest yards are still ahead after committing to deploy British troops in Ukraine if it agrees a peace deal with Russia. France has also offered to set up military hubs and training to Kyiv's troops. And learner drivers could face longer waits for tests as part of updated road safety rules in England and Wales. The government wants to introduce a minimum learning period of up to 6 months for new licence holders. LBC weather largely dry with sunny spells, lingering snow for large parts of Scotland and the northeast of England, a high of 10 degrees.
on the latest episode of The News Agents.
We discuss the continuing threats from the Trump White House towards Greenland. Is this the end of the NATO alliance? And if so, what does it mean for us?
Get the latest episode of The News Agents with Emily Maiklis, John Sopel and Lewis Goodall. Listen or watch on our free Global Player app or the new LBC app.
They say, go big or go home. But now you can go big at home with the Big Arch on delivery. That's right, the Big Arch is back and it's here to stay. Big Arch, for big McDonald's hunger. Order in the McDonald's app. Serve from 11 a.m. 18 plus. Service fee and small order fee may apply. Upcharges apply to delivery orders. Subject to availability, price and participation may vary.
Whatever you're cooking up this year, Lidl has your back. From supporting your protein goal to your plant-powered lifestyle. Enjoy up to 20% off our chilled high-protein and Vomondo plant-based ranges with Lidl Plus. So you can fuel your day your way. Lidl. More to value. 18 plus GB only. While stocks last. Terms apply. See lidl.co.uk/LPTV. Offer ends 14th of 1st, 2026.
A Southern Train is a place where you can wind down and catch up. A chance to let conversations flow and plans unfold. And swap doomscrolling for telling stories. Too good for the group chat. Make the journey part of the joy and save 1/3 with off-peak group tickets at southernrailway.com. Terms apply.
There's one green bottle sat on my fridge shelf. This green and white bottle that supports my gut health. Beautiful by nature and biotiful by name. It's the tastiest way to up my gut health game.
Biotiful Gut Health. Upgrade your yogurt to the UK's number one kefir and reset your gut health with Biotiful. Kefir is a source of calcium which contributes to the normal function of digestive enzymes. For verification of UK's number one kefir, see biotifulguthealth.com/radio.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
Right, let's apply the handbrake and move into a parking area or whatever and come away from driving. We shall return. Vicky, you'll be the next caller. But 8:34, we're going back to Tunbridge Wells. Now, just to remind you, this is because of an appearance in front of a panel of MPs by the so-called boss of South Western Water, the company that did so badly in providing water to around 24,000 homes and businesses in that area. And the boss appearing with a panel of MPs, as our reporter reminded us, he earns £400,000 a year, and despite depriving people of water, he reckoned he had an 8 out of 10 performance. Benji Hire told us the story in the first hour, then he was tasked with getting in and among the good folk of Tunbridge Wells and surrounding area to find out exactly how they responded to that grade. Benji rejoins us. Morning again, Benji. What have the people been telling you?
Good morning, Nick. I think you can guess what they think of the boss of South East Water. These are people, of course, who lived without drinking water for almost 2 weeks. They had to rely on bottled water distribution centres. It affected everybody. Hospitals, care homes. The Prime Minister, Sir Keir Starmer, at the time described the situation as shocking. And South East Water missed multiple deadlines it set itself for water to return. Even after it did, for days, people here had to boil their water. As you mentioned, when the company's boss was asked by MPs how he rated his response, he gave himself an 8 out of 10. But out of 10, what do locals rate him? Boss of South East Water rated himself 8 out of 10 in his response to the crisis. What out of 10 would you give him?
0. Went down for 2 weeks in December and it's down again. They said he'd be back yesterday afternoon. No shower, no water, nothing. Again this morning, nothing.
I'll give a very low rating for sure. Out of 10, I would give him a 4.
0.
0?
Yeah. Well, it's appalling, isn't it? I'm in a little flat and didn't have any water for about best part of a week. It's not the first time, is it? It's happened in Tunbridge. It's happening everywhere. The guy should be sacked.
People here would have given him a lot less than that. Probably a 4.
What out of 10 would you give Dave Hinton of South East Water?
Probably 2. It was an absolute disgrace. He dealt with it terribly. I believe we were lied to.
So not quite out of 8 out of 10, Nick. We got a smattering of numbers there, as low as 0. And as a reminder, South East Water, according to the regulator Ofwat, is the worst performing water company for supply interruptions. Its boss, Dave Hinton, claims that this was simply unavoidable, but the local MP, Mike Martin, disputes that and is calling for him to resign.
LBC's Benji Hire reporting from Tunbridge Wells. 8 out of 10 cats, and he's got the fur flying down in Tunbridge Wells. Let's come back to our conversation concerning road safety. Jonathan says it won't just be pubs, rural pubs that close, golf clubs as well. They have clubhouses that stay open for a pint after a long walk. It will shut hundreds of them. Mark in Lee Green. Young, new drivers need experience of motorways. The amount of times I see drivers coming away from a junction straight over to the fast or outside lane, 90% of whom are young drivers. Jake says engine size should be restricted for new drivers, and every 2 years, without incident, the engine size increases. In and of itself, that's probably not a bad idea, but it's just how you would actually administer that. And Seb tells us in Luxembourg there's two practical tests, one reflecting ours, then another on skids and to teach IC driving. Pretty sure the norm in Sweden too. Vicky's in Chelmsford. Vicky, your reaction to the story we're having, the conversation we're having. Good morning.
Hi, Nick. So I was a driving instructor for 10 years.
Oh, my goodness.
And you see a lot of different people in 10 years.
I bet you
some do. Of those students, some would take a year to pass their test.
A year?
Yep, absolutely. I even had people that I stopped teaching because I didn't think they were ever going to be capable of passing their test, and never should have been.
What's the highest number of tests with someone who did actually make the grade eventually, Vicky?
5 or 6.
Okay. Oh, I thought it was going to be more than that. Okay. Yeah.
5 or 6. Equally, you could have somebody that could get in the car and was just a natural driver and was perfectly capable of passing within a handful of lessons. But my issue is the fact that now it is virtually impossible in our area to get a driving test
is
within
really?
About 9 or 10 months.
Oh, good Lord.
Since COVID... I've booked 3 tests, 2 for my own children and 1 for my daughter's boyfriend.
Mm-hmm.
The wait is probably in the region of 9 to 10 months
mm-hmm.
To get a driving test. It is impossible to go on the DVLA website to get a driving test.
Yes.
And what more and more people are now doing is finding a test somewhere in the country, and then they're joining these WhatsApp groups. And I assume that these tests are somehow... gathered by bots or whatever when they're released.
I see.
But it then costs... So you pay for a driving test through the DVLA website, and then you then pay somewhere in the region of £150 to £200...
I see.
To this WhatsApp group to get yourself a driving test in a reasonable amount of time.
I have a question. Are you still a driving instructor?
No. I stopped about...
How many years did you do it for?
10.
Lastly, as a qualified driver, and do you think the standard of driving is getting worse year by year, is roughly the same, or is improving when you're out just driving as a regular person?
Worse. I drive the M25 to work a lot.
Yeah.
And sometimes it horrifies me.
Really?
But I don't think, if I'm completely honest... that is necessarily down to young, newly qualified drivers.
No.
That is across the board.
I bet you can still remember the stopping distance if you're travelling at 30 miles an hour in the rain.
Don't ask me that.
Safe driving, Vicky. Certainly don't ask me that, but then I took my test centuries ago. Safe driving, Vicky. Ian in Bayswater. Ian, what do you want to tell me? Oh, hang on, you passed your... How soon after your 17th birthday did you pass your test?
It must be a unique one, because I passed my test first time 1 week after my 17th birthday my 17th birthday.
Are you having sport with me? Because obviously there's no way that I can prove or disprove this.
No, 100%. No lie.
Okay, so question. Had you grown up on a farm and you were regularly driving Land Rovers or something like that? I mean, how come you were so in favour?
I haven't grown up on a farm. But the unique thing about this, not only did I pass my test 1 week after my 17th birthday, I had 2 driving lessons, official driving lessons, and that was on the day of my test. I had a double lesson, day of my test, because I used to drive on a provision license with my friends teaching me. So,
Hang on, that's illegal.
What's that say?
That's illegal.
This was in 1960s.
Yeah, I'm not going to do you for it, mate.
I'm 62 now, so that's a long time ago.
Okay, so the reason that you were so comfortable behind the wheel was you'd actually been driving probably for 6 months anyway, illegally with some mates.
Yeah, I mean, I have provisional.
Lawbreaker.
So,
We have a law breaker on line 7. Alert the police. Sorry, go on.
I had L plates on, so it wasn't illegal, as long as you have a provisional.
No, you can't be provisional at 16, can you? No. You've got to be 17, don't you? I can't even remember now. I think it's 17. Okay, let's talk about your driving record since you're... Did you say 62? Is that right? Did you say?
62, yeah.
So 40-something, I don't know, 40-odd years drive. How many points have you had in total on your licence?
But it's gone now. I've had max points was about five or six points, about
okay.
max.
And ever had any knocks, scrapes, bangs, bumps?
No, I've had some couple of people go in the back of me.
Go into the back of you. Okay. Good, but, these changes, broadly speaking, Ian, as regards younger drivers, making sure that, I mean, you wouldn't probably, I don't want to say get away with it, but you wouldn't be able to do that now, restricting the amount of alcohol, possibly restricting the number of mates you could take in the car when you first passed. What do you make of those sort of measures?
I mean, the alcohol part, it really depends who you ask the question to, because I don't know of anyone that's, you know, had a fatal accident because of drinking driving. I would say one pint is fine. But I suppose if you've asked the question to someone that had a family member or friend that's died from drink driving, then they're going to give you a different answer, I suppose.
Safe driving to you, Ian. Thank you for that. Jonathan says an 18-year-old could drive an HGV. It's less about age, more about training and not being inebriated. Tom says, I'm surprised the topic of delivery mopeds hasn't been raised. They're extremely dangerous. A large number of the drivers delivering for fast food companies, they're using a bike for business purposes. They should have a full licence, because, of course, they can drive on an L plate with that, can't they? 8:43, let's get at least one more call in before we give you some headlines. Simon's in Westminster. Simon, what do you want to tell me? Good morning.
Hi, Nick.
Hello,
I passed my driving test in 10 weeks, or just over 10 weeks.
That's pretty impressive.
I had lessons. I had one, sometimes two a week.
Right.
But I went out every night with my father.
Yep.
He took me out every night, and that was also...
Well, literally every night, 7 nights a week.
There may have been one or two he didn't, but pretty much every night of the week he took me out. He was a second-hand car dealer back in the day.
Right.
So cars was his life.
Right.
And the big thing he taught me, he said to me, don't watch the car in front. Watch the car in front of them, so you can see them if they're going to brake.
Yeah, you need to keep an eye on the car in front. I mean, I wouldn't try and gainsay your dad, but it's not a bad idea to keep your eyes on the car directly in front, of course.
But the biggest thing he taught me, Nick, he said, treat a car like a loaded gun.
Oh, my God.
He said, it is that dangerous.
Right.
You need to be so careful. You've got people in your car, there's people out there, and if you make one mistake...
Yeah.
You are putting people's lives, whatever, in danger.
Yeah.
And that's stayed with me ever since.
And I need to ask you about your driving record. Have you ever had any points?
I've had two speed awareness courses, but never actually had any points.
Okay, I've got you. Got you, yes, because you... And have you had many bumps, scrapes and bangs?
I mean, I've had two knocks that were my fault.
Okay, well, then, for being honest.
I can't blame the width restriction for one of them. but I was still young. It was in my first year.
And lastly, a word on these changes that are being proposed. What do you think they'll bring about?
I think it's going to annoy the older drivers, mature drivers, and they'll carry on speeding. And I drive into work, into central London every day. The 20 miles per hour is very frustrating for everyone, as it is. But All these other changes, I think people do need longer to learn. I think that is a good benefit to people.
Safe driving to you, thank you. Coming up after the news.
The family of a teenager are wrongly told that he died in a car crash, only to find out 3 weeks later. I'm Alex Taylor-Brown with the story.
And just put yourself in the shoes of those sets of grieving parents. Horrific mistake by the police involved there. It's 8:45, LBC News headlines. Dominic Ellis.
President Trump is said to be considering a range of options to acquire Greenland, including using military force. Sir Keir Starmer will face MPs for his first Prime Minister's questions since promising yesterday to deploy troops to Ukraine in the event of a peace deal. And speaking to Nick, a transport minister has rejected concerns a shake-up of road safety rules will be the death knell for country pubs. LBC weather largely dry with sunny spells, snow continuing for large parts of Scotland and the northeast of England, a high of 10 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. In Boreham Wood, the Barnet Road's been closed in both directions at Stirling Corner. It's because a lorry has broken down and there are lengthy delays on the approach. Also, these problems at the Elephant and Castle continue. There are delays on the New Kent Road going eastbound. It's because of an accident. And Borough High Street remains closed as well. So this is nearby because of an ongoing police investigation. It's closed from the Tube Station up to Trinity Street, and that's also causing delays. On the Underground, there are now severe delays on the Piccadilly line. Also, minor delays on the Bakerloo and Central lines. Southeastern trains are currently at a standstill southbound between Maidstone East and Ashford International, and that's because of a power problem.
This is LBC.
Every investor has a future in mind, whether it's seeing your kids through uni or picturing yourself retiring in Tuscany. The hard part can be knowing how to get there. JP Morgan Personal Investing can help you see the path ahead. With our intuitive app, expert support, and 150 years of JP Morgan's investing experience, you can start making more informed investment decisions today. Search JP Morgan Personal Investing. Invest with clarity. Capital at risk.
This is LBC. Listen on our free Global Player app or the new LBC app. Download it now from your app store.
Hiya, Kenny the Hamster here, proud pet of Doug and Carol. Hey up, looks like my mum Carol's off out with the girls again. I tell you, since she took that quick NHS Healthy Choices quiz, she's drinking less, but going out more. And to think, she thought being healthy would mean being boring. You might want to give it a go yourself.
Go, girlfriend!
Take your first little step to healthy. Search NHS Healthy Choices quiz to get a score and a simple plan to follow.
With over 50 years experience at Fidelity, we believe there's a difference between investing and being invested. Investing is having access to guidance, tools and expert insights. Being invested means feeling confident about your future. Investing is choosing from a wealth of investment options. Being invested means focusing on your long-term goals. For ISAs, pensions or advice, be truly invested with Fidelity. Go to fidelity.co.uk. Your capital is at risk. Terms apply.
MJ the Musical. The electrifying Olivier Award-winning hit, now in its final weeks. Featuring the jaw-dropping dance moves and legendary songs of Michael Jackson. Don't miss out. Book now at mjthemusical.com.
Experience. It's knowing when something is worth waiting for and when it isn't. That's why Saga Health Insurance offers unlimited GP appointments whenever you need them. With a choice of flexible plans, prompt tests and treatment, your health is taken care of. And right now, get 3 months free. Search Saga Health Insurance for a quote today. New customers starting a policy before the 19th of February. Pay by monthly direct debit for the first year. Terms and conditions apply. Over 50s only.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973.
Coming up on 10 minutes before 9. Now, when one of my colleagues phoned me yesterday to tell me about the following story, and as I've told you countless times, I've been in and around journalism for decades, and I've also been a father. It just absolutely rocked me. It's the front page of one of the newspapers today, arguably, notwithstanding the importance of events in Ukraine and Greenland and that conference in Paris and everything else that's going on. But this, as the Daily Mail says, police blunder to defy belief. And it is absolutely staggering how a family spent 3 weeks grieving after being wrongly told their teenage son had died in a car crash. A second family had told their son had survived, but he'd actually died. Here were the details of this truly extraordinary story. Alex Taylor-Brown, who's LBC's Yorkshire correspondent, he's outside the police force, which finds itself in the crosshairs of this one. South Yorkshire Police, Jim Sheffield. Alex, morning.
Morning, Nick. Well, this is one of those stories where you really have to read the information a few times because you can't actually quite believe what's in front of you. This all goes back to the early hours of Saturday, the 13th of December, a car coming off Todwick Road in Rotherham, killing two teenagers, a 17-year-old girl, as well as another male who was believed to be 17-year-old Trevor Wynne. An 18-year-old man who was believed to be Joshua Johnson was sedated in hospital. Now, on Sunday, that's 3 weeks after the collision, Police say information came to light, which has now led to further formal identification processes, including forensics, to be undertaken. That led to the revelation that Trevor was not dead, and it was he who'd been sedated in hospital, meaning that Joshua had in fact been killed in the collision. That means one family has spent Christmas thinking their son is dead when he's actually alive, and another thinking their son was lying seriously injured in hospital when he was actually dead. This coming Friday, Nick, was due to be Trevor's funeral until it emerged he was still alive. South Yorkshire Police say the families and Trevor will be offered support from specialist services. The Assistant Chief Constable saying in a statement, this has come as a huge shock to everyone and that he recognises the additional trauma this may cause. He's also offered to meet both sets of parents. And the force has referred itself to the police watchdog, the IOPC. The watchdog telling us they are currently assessing whether an investigation from them is required. Now, a GoFundMe was set up for Trevor's family to help cover the costs of his funeral initially. Jonathan Stoner, a family friend, is behind it. He's posted a video following the news yesterday, and this is what he's had to say.
Me and the fighters and everyone who got involved, the sponsors and everyone who raised money for TJ, what they've done, they got the bodies mixed up in the accident. The police have admitted that they mixed up the bodies. So they told one family, your son's alive. They told the other family, your son's passed away. For 3 weeks, that's what they believed. Until TJ woke up in the hospital and they went in and they said, that's not our son. And then that's when they realised, the police realised, we need you to come to the hospital to identify him.
Now, Jonathan says that that money raised so far will instead go to Trevor's recovery, and he'll also set up another page to go to Joshua's family as well. This is still an active investigation, Nick. Two men aged 19 and 18 who were arrested in connection with the collision remain on bail.
Alex, before I let you go, something, and you know how LBC works, people are already texting in and WhatsApping on this, and we must allow, of course, for the trauma that both families are enduring, but people are asking, wasn't there some form of identification that took place at the hospital involved?
Yeah, now, obviously, there are lots of questions around this. This is such an unbelievable story, and people may well be thinking, well, how did the families not know? There will be more information that will come out of this. At this stage, we're just going to sort of refer back to what police told us, in that forensic evidence was used in this again in order to identify Trevor and Joshua. But Nick, a quite unbelievable story, but unfortunately very, very real for two families.
Alex Taylor-Brown is LBC's Yorkshire correspondent, joining us from South Yorkshire Police HQ in Sheffield. Obviously, there's no further explanations coming from the families because of the traumas that they are both enduring. We must respect that. But as so many of you are saying, what happened, and I sense that will come out in time, but it is not appropriate because we have two families, effectively, one coming out of mourning in a sense, the other going into mourning in what is quite extraordinary. And the South Yorkshire Police says, we're going to refer ourselves to the IOPC. Oh, well, that'll solve it all. South Yorkshire Police, the most extraordinary record of mispolicing, goes all the way back, actually goes beyond Hillsborough. It's the same force time after time after time after time. Talking about incompetent police forces, we'll talk about West Mids in the next hour and how they completely fabricated a football match over that Aston Villa game with the Israeli team. But we'll conclude the hour at 5 minutes before nine by getting back on the roads, hopefully safely. Who's been hanging on the line? Peter's in Cookham, been hanging on for some time. Peter, your reaction to what we're hearing from the government and its minister. Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. Pleasure to speak to the voice of reason of LBC.
Gosh, I don't know about that.
I just think it's totally ill-conceived, this ridiculous stipulation to have a 6 month gap between your theory test and your practical test. So what shall I do? Just sit on the sofa and scratch my bits for 6 months?
Well, I suppose they want you to get more time under your belt, sort of thing.
Exactly. So why just tick days off a calendar? Why not say, right, you must do 6 hours of driving or 10 hours of driving or something?
Are they right to address, in some sense, that you need a bit of road experience, i.e. that you've driven at night, you've driven in the rain, you've driven, I understand it's quite icy in many parts of the UK today?
Right. Well, I'm older generation, so I rode a moped. I didn't take my test on a moped, so I rode it on L-plates for 12 months. When my 17th birthday came, I booked in advance my car motorbike test and my car test. So I took my motorbike test the day after my 17th birthday, passed it, right. And I took my car test 4 days after that, passed it.
Oh, my goodness.
So it's all done, sorted.
So you were able to reverse around a corner in a car like that?
Yeah, absolutely no bother whatsoever. I had 2 one-hour lessons, 1 hour directly before my car test.
How extraordinary.
And had one, let's say, 2 days after.
How long have you been driving, Peter?
Longer than I should have been.
50 years behind the wheel, roughly?
Oh, blimey. Well, I'm 67.
Yeah, so 50 years behind the wheel.
Many years.
Do you think driving standards have improved, have gone backwards, stayed the same?
Gone backwards, also combined with the higher density of traffic.
Mm.
You know, I don't think there's one size fits all. I don't think there's just one thing. But the driving standards of today aren't what they used to be, without a shadow of a doubt.
Lastly, I don't know it well, but I do know Cookham. It's moderately rural. People are saying it will be the death of pubs, possibly golf clubs, if we bring the alcohol limit down. Your reaction to that, Peter, in Berkshire?
I agree. You know, I enjoy a pint as much as, the next bloke. Mm-hmm. And having a pint in your local is part of the local community spirit. So I think it would be a death blow to local pubs.
Safe driving, Peter. Be aware, of course, while one person can handle one pint, it's very much on your body mass and how quickly you can process alcohol. One pint will be enough, I warn you, to get many of you over the limit anyway. And I am in no way advocating, supporting, making the argument for drink driving. Peter, safe driving. Let's get one last call. Tony in Halifax. Tony, you're on the radio. How quickly did you pass? Everyone's so clever. Come on, how many weeks for you?
2 weeks.
Two? Good Lord.
Three
okay.
Weeks. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
The changes that the government are suggesting, an overview on that, if you would, Tony.
I think they're going in the right way. I don't think they've gone far enough.
Oh, right.
The standard of driving nowadays is absolutely atrocious. I'm an instructor on motorbikes for RoSPA.
Oh, yes.
And
Royal
the
Society of Prevention of Accidents.
Yeah. And the standard of driving that we see on the roads today is... Everybody seems to be in too much of a rush. They don't give thought to anybody else apart from themselves, and that's what creates a lot of the trouble.
So the restrictions, what more should they be doing, lastly, Tony?
I think they should be limiting the use of the vehicles.
Right.
And making sure that if young people pass the test, that the size of the vehicles that they can use is restricted for the first 3 or 4 years.
That was something that suggested, of course, engine size. If they've got the money, they could jump into a fairly powerful car almost immediately. Mind you, insurance might prohibit some of that. Thanks for that. Safe driving to you too. We move to other matters. Kemi Badenoch leading the charge that the Chief Constable of West Midlands should resign. Here's his assistant Chief Constable, Mike O'Hara, speaking in front of a panel of MPs yesterday.
The challenge around risk decision-making is public safety has got to be at the heart of it. So, again, I understand the frustration, but there is no conspiracy here. This was a decision based on safety.
Plus, the Entente Cordiale that will see British and French troops in Ukraine as part of peacekeeping forces, General Sir Richard Sheriff.
Enforcing peace means being prepared to overmatch the Russians, and that means also being prepared to fight them if necessary.
News is next on LBC.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 9 o'clock, President Trump is said to be considering military action as one of the options to take over Greenland. Mr. Trump has again reiterated his desire to annex the semi-autonomous region of Denmark on national security grounds. Sir Keir Starmer and other European leaders have stated that Greenland belongs to its people. Former Labour Defence Secretary Lord Hutton has told LBC, US invasion rhetoric is ridiculous.
The idea that the US would militarily invade Greenland and take over, I think that's just not going to happen. I think that would be something we probably can effectively rule out. But, you know, it is already the case that the United States has a military presence on Greenland. I don't think there'd be any serious or significant issue in negotiating additional military bases for the United States in Greenland. I think that's the way forward.
President Zelensky has praised European security guarantees for Ukraine in the event of a peace deal with Russia. British and French troops would help Kyiv defend itself from future attack and train its military. Keir Starmer is expected to be questioned by MPs about the details of Prime Minister's questions this lunchtime. The UK Health Security Agency has now extended a cold health alert for all regions of England until Sunday. It's ahead of Storm Goretti hitting the UK tomorrow, bringing with it a so-called weather bomb. A major incident has also been declared in Aberdeenshire as snow continues to grip the north of Scotland. Learner drivers in England and Wales could have to wait up to 6 months between sitting their theory and practical tests. The proposal is part of the government's new road safety strategy. Reform's Nigel Farage says plans to reduce the drink drive limit are a death knell for country pubs, but the Transport Minister Lillian Greenwood has told Nick the plans are aiming to cut the number of preventable deaths.
Usually people are going out to the pub with a group of friends, and what my suggestion would be is agree that one of you is going to be the designated driver, or have a low alcohol or zero alcohol drink. And what I'd say to Nigel Farage is sit down with the families that I've sat down with whose lives have been absolutely devastated, torn apart when a member of their family has been killed by a drink driver.
And the social media platform X insists that it is making improvements after increasing criticism of its controversial AI chatbot, Grok. Concerns have been raised about the technology being used to create sexualized deepfake images of women and girls. The technology secretary, Liz Kendall, has backed enforcement action by Ofcom, who have opened an investigation into the complaints. In the city, a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading down 45 at 10,077. The pound buys $1.34 and a euro 15. LBC weather largely dry with sunny spells, lingering snow in large parts of Scotland and the northeast of England, a high of 10 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
Dogs and cats, sure, they need a lot, but they're worth every penny. Still, would be good if you could save a few pennies, right? Well, if you've got a Tesco Club Card, you'll get a Club Card discount on Tesco Pet Insurance. And all policies include VetPhone for peace of mind 24/7. Just search online for Tesco Pet Insurance. Pets age 8 weeks or over, vet phone provided by Vets Direct Limited. Monetary limits, excesses and exclusions apply. Arranged by Pinnacle Insurance Limited.
This is LBC from Global. Leading Britain's conversation with Nick Ferrari at breakfast.
Morning, 3 minutes after nine on Wednesday, January the 7th. The wrong arm of the law. What is it that one chief constable is doing that has Kemi Badenoch and others urging that he should lose his job? We'll tell you in just a few moments' time. Plus the Entente Cordiale. Yes, there will be British boots on the ground in Ukraine as part of a peacekeeping force. But remember how we were going to go into Afghanistan and, quotes, not a shot will be fired? Hundreds of personnel lost their lives, many hundreds more were injured, and possibly some still coping with the aftermath. How comfortable are you with that? Plus, what does Melania really hate about Donald Trump? No, it's not an A to Z of those. There's one particular aspect, and we'll be telling you that late in the hour. And this extraordinary story.
I was put into a position where I had to crowdfund for my wife's funeral. I'm Jack Taft, I'm a father of two, and I'll be speaking to Nick later in the show.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060 973. Text 84850. Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
Crowdfunding for funerals, that's a disturbing one, and that's later in the hour. But equally disturbing would seem to be the utter incompetence of one particular police force. One of the largest in the land, by the way, particularly over this case of the game versus Aston Villa and Maccabee, you may recall from last year. As I mentioned earlier, Kemi Badenoch now leading the call for the relevant chief constable to go. LBC's political correspondent Aggie Chambray was watching the relevant panel of MPs yesterday, joins me in the studio. Morning, Aggie.
Morning, Nick. Yeah, this was an absolutely extraordinary select committee session, at times extremely tense with seeming fury from the questioning MPs. Just to give you a little taster.
Good job you can't see the shaking of heads behind you, Chief Constable.
There was plenty more like this in that 90-minute session. The second these police chiefs have faced on the topic, that unprecedented on its own. Now, the row is over that controversial ban of away fans from the Aston Villa Maccabi Tel Aviv game last November in Birmingham. The reason given by West Mids Police to the local safety advisory group who eventually made that decision was that there were violent clashes and hate crime offences during a game between Ajax and Maccabi in Amsterdam 2024. That has been disputed by Dutch police. And they also said, West Midlands Police, that Dutch police needed 5,000 officers at that match. It was actually 1,200 officers. And West Mids Police said yesterday, look, that was merely an estimate, a professional estimate, but we didn't double check. Having said that, Assistant Chief Constable Mike O'Hara did defend most of their decisions.
And the challenge around risk decision making is public safety has got to be at the heart of it. So again, I understand the frustration, but there is no conspiracy here. This was a decision based on safety.
His boss, Chief Constable Craig Guildford, rejected a claim from Chairwoman Dame Karen Bradley that the force was scraping for a reason to justify the ban.
Well, that's absolutely not the case. I'm really sorry if it comes across in that way. That was absolutely not the case. The information, the intelligence that we received, that we documented, and we've shared absolutely all of that.
Now, that's a loosely based word, intelligence, in this case, isn't it? Aggie Shonberry continues.
Well, quite. And there was this astonishing admission. I couldn't quite believe it, Nick, that one of the matches referenced by West Mids in their report to that safety advisory group didn't actually exist. The mistake had been made because a police officer couldn't find anything about this match in an intelligence report because it didn't exist. So they simply went on Google, and this was the excuse given for that. Elsewhere, Craig Guildford denied there was political interference in this decision.
From everything that I've read and the commanders that I've spoke to, I do not believe that there was political influence on that decision. I don't believe that to be the case. Local politicians and local members of the community, I'm sure, wanted to try and influence it, but I honestly don't think it was influenced.
Of course, the claim was that away fans were going to be targeting local fans with violence. But actually, in this session, Mike O'Hara claimed the force had taken into account concerns that it was away fans that could be targeted with violence, unlike the claim they'd made.
We were very clear that there was a huge degree of consternation from the community around the arrival of Maccabi Tel Aviv, and that as a direct result of that concern, we got a lot of information and intelligence to suggest that people were going to actively seek out Maccabi Tel Aviv fans and would seek violence towards them. So we had sort of like a bubbling position locally.
Well, why hadn't this been mentioned before? Well,
I think this is the first time specifically that you've asked for that detail. That's what we tried. That's what we tried to get across.
Absolutely outrageous.
I think you could hear that MP in the background there just saying absolutely outrageous. And I think that really sums up the vibe of that 90-minute session. As you say, Kemi Badenoch, the leader of the Conservatives, has now called for Craig Guildford to go. And she wrote on social media last night, West Midlands police had capitulated to Islamists and then collaborated with them to cover it up. Nick, this feels far from over.
What happens now, lastly, Aggie? We wait and watch the Chief Constable's position, I imagine, do we?
I think that's right. There's also an ongoing investigation by the Home Secretary, Shabana Mahmood. We're expecting that to come next week. That's into how local safety advisory groups work and specifically into this case. So I think there may be more information coming out of this. But the fact that this was their second session of police chiefs and they had to come back after the first one because MPs were not satisfied. Well, goodness gracious, maybe they'll have to come back again.
LBC's political correspondent Aggie Shonberry reporting. Let's turn to Sir Peter Fahey, who's former Chief Constable of Greater Manchester Police and indeed was the police lead of the Prevent programme some years back. Joins me now. Sir Peter, what's gone wrong here? Morning.
Well, just and a whole host of things, unfortunately, hasn't it, Nick? I don't think they really understood at the beginning the enormity of the decision that they were making. I don't know whether that's because Birmingham doesn't have particularly large Jewish population. I think it might have been different if it was in London or Manchester, because I think there is far greater understanding of the feelings of the Jewish community there. But then on top of that, you know, they clearly, the communication wasn't great in terms of the reasoning. And you'd have to say it's they didn't appear to be terribly well prepared for the session yesterday, despite it being the second one. And it never works well. You've then got to say, well, we actually need to then submit even more evidence after that. So I think even, you know, to be fair, in what you played out, the reasoning appears to have been confused. I think whether we like it or not, you know, there is always, certainly if not political pressure, community pressure in a situation like that. As a chief constable, you have to manage that and talk to people and take that into account. But ultimately, it is a safety decision. And I don't think they really explained terribly well. You know, at the Aston Villa ground, it's in an inner city area. It's not like the Etihad Stadium in Manchester or some of the other newer stadiums. It's particularly difficult to police. It would have been very difficult to get fans in and all the rest of it. And whether we like it or not, the whole thing was influenced by the wider international situation and absolutely the particular concerns both about anti-Semitism and Islamophobia. And I'm not sure that the Westminster Police really took into account that the enormity of the decision they were making and the fact that it was just never about whether a football match should go ahead or not.
Sir Peter, Kemi Badenoch's holding back. She says Craig Kilford's position is untenable. She goes on to say the police, and I quote, capitulated to Islamists and then collaborated with them to cover it up. Has the police, have they been compromised by partiality here in your view?
I don't think so. I think it is just really not a great decision. The confusion about the safety advisory group, I don't think there's any evidence in what they've said that they're influenced by Islamists or anybody else. I just think it ultimately was a poor decision and not terribly well communicated and explained to the wider public. But ultimately, you know, the position of a chief constable is down to the local police and crime commissioner, and he will need to make that decision.
But when Mrs. Badenoch says police, and I quote again, new extremists were planning to attack Jews for going to a football match, their response was to blame and remove Jewish people. She's right there, isn't she, Sir Peter?
Yeah, I don't know that that was particularly just it. It was the fact that there was, the whole thing was not just about a football match, but it was about a likely protest around it. But I mean, I don't know why Westminster Police at a fairly early stage didn't understand the enormity of that and particularly go to the Home Office and say we'll need support and more funding and bring more officers in. And this is the enormity of what we're about to undertake. So, you know, I don't think you can say that they made it to appease a particular section of the community. Whatever they did, it was going to be contentious. And I don't think they really took into account, as I say, the enormity of the decision that they were making and whether we like it or not, the political and community ramifications.
Lastly, Sir Peter, I know there is a sort of unspoken bond between chief constables and commissioners because of the extreme pressures that you face in your respective geographical parts of the country, but let's be candid with each other. This bloke can't stay in post, can he?
It's not my decision. I need to say absolutely. I know Craig. He served with me in Cheshire and the rest of it. And ultimately, the Police and Crime Commissioner will have to look at the wider issue about, Westminster Police and the problems of the force.
If we keep a football analogy going, he's lost the dressing room in the West Mids and he needs a red card, Peter.
Yeah, at the moment, you certainly would have to say they're going to have to do a lot to really get a much clearer explanation of what happened here. But I think, you may be right. The situation may have got to, a place where that's going to be just really difficult to retrieve.
Irretrievable, possibly. So, Peter Fahey, you served as Chief Constable of Greater Manchester Police. Thank you, Peter. You were the police leader of the Prevent programme. There can be no ifs or buts about this, can there? I appreciate that it seemed the greater incompetent is one of his colleagues, who seems to preside over deliberately, and I say this, deliberately false information being provided and peddled. Football matches that didn't exist. Google search. A whole police policy be decided on one Google search and one telephone call. One telephone call to their counterparts in Holland, in the Netherlands, about what happened in a game there in November 2024. One telephone call. And I appreciate, again, it is probably people beneath him, but the boss has to go, doesn't he? Katie's in Boreham Wood. Katie, good morning.
Good morning. I understand your previous caller, policeman speaking together, but he's completely wrong. I personally listened and watched to what happened yesterday in the parliamentary committee. And it is beyond belief what has come out.
What shocked you the most, Katie?
It didn't shock me the most that Westminster Police were completely influenced by the local community and they decided the path of least resistance. But they basically made a decision, then they fabricated and fabricated evidence, made up lies to do that. They couldn't answer why there was, in different reports, they mentioned which communities were at risk. And in the first report, they said the Jewish community at high risk. Mm. That was redacted. They couldn't answer that. They couldn't, they said that the information from the Dutch police, from Lord John Mann, all of that, they then said, we had a conversation with the Dutch police. There's no evidence of that. There's no minutes. They asked about the minutes of the SAG committee. And in the minutes, the second, it has nothing saying about the information that came from the police. It literally, and one of the MPs actually said it was left-wing anti-Semites just spouting. And they asked.
They also lied about contact with the Birmingham and West Midlands Jewish community, a woman called Ruth Jacobs. They said they had, and Ms. Jacobs said they'd had no contact with her whatsoever.
It is very, very simple watching it. And I watched MPs get incredulous, asking specific questions. There was no evidence. It's the second time they've been called. Never been known. It is so unusual. West Midlands police were scared of a local mob who had threatened to cause violence.
Yep.
And they took the decision to ban against UK policing unit, against what Dutch said. Then they said there was no evidence, found the evidence. You really want to see it. People should go on the parliamentary channel and watch it.
Katie, thank you. They have been compromised by partiality. There's no doubt about it. I remember saying, and so many of you were furious when this ban was first mooted, if I was the chief constable, I'd have brought in the Marines. I would have ensured that those fans could go. You cannot have a sporting fixture go ahead where you decide you can't come and see the games. It is just wrong. So many of you disagreed. Now we can see that it was, the decision was taken on total bogus evidence. We'll have more calls on that. Also, as we learnt yesterday from that meeting in Paris, there will be British boots on the ground in Ukraine as part of a peacekeeping operation. The view of historian Mark Allman speaking with me in the first hour of the show.
The British public will have a memory of people saying deployment to Afghanistan would be without a shot being fired. Well, I'm afraid hundreds dead later, we know that that's not how these things go.
More on that after the 9:17 LBC News headlines read by Dominic Ellis.
The White House says President Trump is considering options, including military action, to acquire Greenland. Sir Keir Starmer says the hardest yards are still ahead after promising to deploy British troops in Ukraine in the event of a peace deal. And learner drivers in England and Wales could have to wait up to 6 months between sitting their theory and practical tests. LBC weather, largely dry with sunny spells, lingering snow for large parts of Scotland and the northeast of England, a high of 10 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. Borough High Street remains closed in both directions, and that's because of an ongoing investigation. Very busy in Roehampton, with Roehampton Lane staying closed both ways because of the burst water main. There are still queues on the A10 in both directions to the M25 junction. Now, earlier on, a lorry broke down, actually on the junction roundabout. It's been cleared for a while, but it's left lengthy delays. On the train, South Eastern services can't run southbound between Otford and Ashford International, and that's because of a power problem. Also, minor delays continue on the Elizabeth line between Paddington and Heathrow Airport. And on the underground, there are minor delays on the Central and Bakerloo lines, but better news for the Piccadilly line. Those delays have cleared.
This is LBC.
So, so, so scandalous. You, yeah, you. When life gets a little too lifey, why not lighten it up with Muller Lights? So go on, reach into that fridge, rip that lid off and spoon it like nobody's watching. There's the fruit-delicious raspberry and cranberry, zesty Greek-style lemon, or the tasty new tiramisu flavour. Ooh, but where to start? Eeny, meeny, miny, yum. Muller Light, get the good going.
Call Nick Ferrari now, 0345 6060973, LBC.
This is what award-winning customer service sounds like from Real Octopus Energy Calls.
I've dealt with many utility companies for many years across several properties, and Octopus are an absolute breath of fresh air.
Octopus Energy, great value and outstanding customer service, recommended by Which? 8 years running.
A Thames Link train is a place where you can wind down and catch up. A chance to let conversations flow and plans unfold. And swap doom-scrolling for telling stories. Too good for the group chat. Make the journey part of the joy and save one-third with off-peak group tickets at thameslinkrailway.com. Terms apply.
Check you're on track for a happy retirement with PensionBee's easy-to-use app. Because when your pension is in a good place, you're in a good place. when investing your capital is at risk.
If you have an M&S online account or a Sparks card, your data may have been exposed in a recent cyber attack. Earlier this year, M&S confirmed a data breach affecting customer information, including personal data. If you've ever shopped online at M&S or used Sparks, you could be entitled to compensation through a group action claim. Check your eligibility today at jointheclaim.com. It's quick, secure, and easy to do online at jointheclaim.com.
Octopus Energy. Great value and outstanding customer service. Recommended by Which? 8 years running. Octopus Energy.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
Joe says if the police capitulated this time about not allowing the Maccabi Tel Aviv fans into the UK to see the match, how many other times have they let a mob get away with it? Same subject, appeasing men of the community who play holier than thou, cry aggressive dominance, and then play the victim. Tony's in Nottingham. Tony, what are you going to say to this? Good morning.
Good morning. I think what you're doing is you're getting a glimpse of what's happened with the grooming gang scandal. That's what you're seeing.
How do you get me from this football game to grooming gangs?
Because what it is, it's a glimpse, it's showing, it's a totally different subject, but it's the police just openly showing the fear that they've got in the community and how they treat different, some communities one way and some communities another way. And that's what you're seeing a glimpse of. And I used to be a police officer, I've left 10 years ago now, but what happens is they hammer, since it was decided that all the police were institutionally racist, they hammer that home to such an extent that police start to treat people differently. And you've seen that, you see that with officers on the beat, and you see that with, more so with management, because they've got more to lose and they're petrified and they treat people differently.
How did that show itself on regular day-to-day policing in your experience, Tony?
Well, what I would say is, with regular day-to-day policing, so I was quite a proactive police officer, very, very proactive. I was recognised for it. I made a lot of arrests and did lots of things. And as we had newer people coming in, I joined in 2009, but as time went on, and I got a bit more established, they would put people out with me, that were not proactive. And if people are not proactive and not making arrests and things, they need to be encouraged to do so. And I definitely saw, not just with the Muslim community, but with the ethnic minority community in general, I saw new people be hesitant when they were dealing with people, and they didn't feel they'd need to be hesitant with, say, the white working class, mm-hmm. because there's less chance of blowback. But then when if someone starts throwing the old racist card around, they became hesitant and sort of stepped back when they should be stepping forward.
What happens? If this isn't addressed, where do you see this going?
I think it's very clear to me, and it's demonstrable for numerous things, that we are not policing without fear or favour anymore. You saw it during the riots. There was the guy from West Mids that said they let the community police themselves. There's been numerous examples of this, this sort of mentality, where they are just very sort of just treating people differently. And you can't have that. And all that's going to do is antagonise and wind up
the local people. Of course it will, because as you know better than I, because you were brave enough to have done it, you have to police without fear or favour. Tony, thank you for your years of service and thank you for your call. Ash is in Birmingham. Ash, your reaction to this story. Good morning.
Hi, morning, Nick. No, I think quite frankly, I think there seems to be a witch hunt against West London police, and I'll explain why. These decisions need to be based upon local intelligence. And local intelligence, if you know the area, so if you know Aston and the surrounding area, it's a predominantly Muslim area, and we do have to police, unfortunately, according to the demographics of the area.
You can't cede control
of
the streets. I'm going to bring you down. I'll bring you back. Ash, you cannot cede control of the streets because of the makeup of a geographical part of a town or city. That is not the way forward.
That's not what I'm saying.
It is, because you just said... Excuse me, I'll do it again. You just said that I don't know the makeup of Aston. I have been there, but I don't know the makeup as well as you do. You cannot police on those grounds.
Well, if you let me explain, I'll explain to you why. So a policing approach that would work somewhere in a village in Cheshire wouldn't be the same approach as you'd approach to an inner city area in Birmingham. That's quite
but
a standard.
It must be
you
the
say
same.
That.
What don't you understand? Well, you can't police according to geographical areas.
Okay. So I'll explain to you, Nick, as to why I believe that. So look, the travelling fans, there is current sentiment going on. Of course, we know what's going on. That's absolutely fine. But the decision was based on local intelligence that if the travelling fans came to Birmingham, they'd be under some possible violence or some threats against them. It was a sensible decision to stop both parties from having that fracas. And I think,
to stop Jewish people going to a football match. You call that a sensible decision?
It's nothing to...
Based on one telephone call to their counterparts in Amsterdam, one Google search, and one football match that didn't take place. You're calling that rational policing, Ash.
But, Nick, you're falling into the rhetoric there. This is nothing...
There's no rhetoric. Those are all facts. One telephone call to Dutch police, one Google search... one football match that didn't take place. There's no rhetoric. Those are three facts.
Yeah, but, Nick, this is to do with Israel, not Jewish people. Let's get that quite clear.
I don't care if it's Israel, Greenland, or wherever it might be. You cannot allow areas or groups to decide what is or is not policed.
But that is a common-sense policing approach.
No,
you
it's
can't
not.
Have a blanket
that
approach
no,
to all areas.
Talk to any senior police officer, not at the rank of chief constable. They can't decide, I tell you what, we're going to police one side of the borough in this way because it's predominantly white, and we'll police another side of the borough this way because there's a lot of Jewish people living. You can't police like that.
But Nick, that's how the whole country works.
Well, I don't know why you say that, because...
Well, of course it does, Nick. Of course. Have you never heard of the Guinness effect, Nick?
The Guinness effect?
Yes, have you never heard of the Guinness effect?
I don't know what... No, my ignorance is...
I seek you to go away and actually look into the Guinness effect.
All right, if you're not going to explain, I will. We'll talk again. Peter's in Stirling. Peter, you're on the radio. Good morning.
Morning, Nick.
Yes,
I've got a bit of a nuance to you. Firstly, I do think Guildford's got to go. I actually called up defending the ban, and while I think that generally, if they'd actually found the intelligence, the ban should have gone ahead,
yeah.
The car being Tel Aviv... along with Beitar Jerusalem, have the worst reputation of any fans in that league. They're as bad as Millwall were back in their heyday. But at the same time, you can't not go through due process. You can't fabricate or cut corners of intelligence in that. There has to be due process, no matter what you think of this group. And honestly, I think this is certain figures within the police force who have these knee-jerk reactions to certain groups and then want to cut corners to avoid hassle.
Is that what you think? By the way, I've looked it up. The Guinness effect is where white rises to the top. I'd never heard that before, but that's what the Guinness effect... And you think that's what happened? Sorry, you had heard it. Well, you're smarter than I am.
No, I haven't heard it.
Just because you're smarter than me, it doesn't make you a better person. Now, Peter, what happens now with the West Midlands Police?
Well, I think Guildford's got to go, and I think they've got to really have a look at how they handle this. Because honestly... As I said, I've got not really much sympathy at all for the Maccabi Tel Aviv Ultras, but I am a bit concerned of how they're going to place future games if what they're doing is they're cutting corners and that to make their job easier with football fans. I mean, what's going to happen if, like, you know, let's say, you know, they end up playing Birmingham City in the cup or something? What's going to happen?
Well, I don't know that Birmingham City currently are challenging in Europe, but you're right, Aston Villa, and of course, I was going to say West Brom there in the area, but... They actually managed to lose to Leicester City, which takes some doing to lose to Leicester at the moment. But they managed it. Peter, stay safe. Thank you. I'm finishing with you to get one more call in before we go for a full news update. Simon in Harrogate. Simon, what do you want to say? Good morning.
Morning, Nick. Just wanted to echo what I think your previous caller, Katie, said.
Yes.
About the fabrication, the lying of the evidence. It gets even worse than that because on the night of the match, there were two protest groups. There was pro-Palestinian group.
Right.
And there was the pro-Israel group. Now, the pro-Israel group were, it was mainly, there was a lot of Jewish protesters there.
Right.
Clearly a lot of Zionists.
Were you
there? No, I wasn't.
No.
I'm aware of people from the Leeds area that were there.
Right, okay.
They were actually forced into what was now known as a Jew cage. So...
Colloquially, that's appalling. Yes, go ahead.
Just let that sink in for a moment. The chief constable not only allowed lies to be made about the Maccabi Tel Aviv fans, but fabricated all the evidence to suit his agenda. But they forced Jews and Zionists into a cage, which is now known as a Jew cage.
Okay, I hear that. Obviously, we have to be aware that this is a very inflammatory language, but as I speak, it's a report is being brought up from someone in the Daily Telegraph who used that expression. So where does that leave the Chief Constable in your view then, Simon?
Well, he has to go. Well, the likelihood is that he'll resign. But really, he should be sacked.
Yes, it was a steel-ringed basketball court, apparently, yeah. Which is where all those Jewish people were herded into. Not surprisingly, of course. To those who would say, lastly, because of the threat of violence, the Westminster took the right decision because of the concerns, how would you respond?
Well, they took the wrong decision because what they should have been doing is they should have been tackling the source of the problem. Absolutely. They shouldn't have been tackled. They took the easiest option. They took the easiest option of banning the fans, and then on the night of the match, they took the easiest option by caging
They were completely compromised by partiality, Simon. Thank you. More on this also coming up after the news. We will go back to that signing of the declaration by both Emmanuel Macron and Keir Starmer over some peacekeeping force in Ukraine. We'll return to that. 9:30, breakfast with me, Nick Ferrara, here on LBC News Time. Dominic Ellis.
The Trump administration has suggested that the US military could be deployed to annex Greenland. The US president says he wants to take the semi-autonomous region of Denmark because of a national security priority. Talks between the US and Ukrainian officials about security guarantees for Kyiv are due to resume in Paris later. Yesterday, the UK and France promised to deploy troops to help Ukraine defend itself from future attack in the event of a peace deal being agreed with Russia. And learner drivers could face longer waits for tests as part of updated road safety rules in England and Wales. The government wants to introduce a minimum learning period of up to 6 months for new licence holders. LBC weather largely dry with sunny spells today. Lingering snow showers for large parts of Scotland and the northeast of England, a high of 10 degrees.
LBC.
Calling all young creatives. It's time to get prepped for the art and design industry. And where better than Global Academy? Here's Keo, an art and design student in year 12.
As an art student, we get the chance to work on our own pieces, either in the studio or using the digital software. Some of my work has also been shown in galleries, and last week I got the chance to attend a design agency to learn more about my future career.
Global Academy. Apply now and join us in years 10 or 12. GlobalAcademy.com.
New year, new you. Maybe. New year, new car. Definitely. Upgrade your year with a new Vauxhall Fonterra Electric or any car from our award-winning range. With 0% APR over 4 years with a minimum 20% deposit and £1,000 off on top of all other offers. That's a resolution worth sticking to. Search Vauxhall today. £1,000 saving on new car orders until the January 2026. Personal contract purchase, 20% deposit, 18 plus. Subject to status and availability. T's and C's, Stellantis Financial Services.
There's one green bottle sat on my fridge shelf. This green and white bottle that supports my gut health. Beautiful by nature and beautiful by name. It's the tastiest way to up my gut health game.
Beautiful Gut Health. Upgrade your yogurt to the UK's number one kefir and reset your gut health with Beautiful. Kefir is a source of calcium which contributes to the normal function of digestive enzymes. For verification of UK's number one kefir, see beautifulguthealth.com/radio.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345-6060-973.
Well, on a day there's been no shortage of surprising headlines, let's try this one on for you. Families using loan sharks to cover the cost of funerals. Grieving families have been forced to turn to loan sharks and crowdfunding to pay for the cost of funerals. The soaring prices mean 15% of those paying for a funeral face financial concern. This is research done by Sun Life. It's an over-50s financial firm. They've tracked the cost of funerals for 22 years. Wow. Even a simple attended funeral will now cost the thick end of £4,000. A more traditional one is over £4,500. So people turn to crowdfunding and other matters. Let's bring to the conversation Jack Taft, who's a father of two, who set up a GoFundMe page to crowdfund his wife's funeral and joins me now. Obviously, I have to start by saying commiserations. Please understand that from me to you. But can we go a little bit over the background and when we're talking about... Can I call you Jack? Is that all right? Morning to you.
Yeah, of course. No, it's an absolute pleasure to be on. Thank you for having me.
Thanks, Jack. We go back a couple of years to when you lost your wife.
Yeah, just over a year ago. So November 2024.
Oh, right. As recent as that. I'm so sorry. You're a young bloke, so she would have been a young woman.
Yeah, she was about 42 at the time of her diagnosis.
Oh dear.
She died at 44. So yeah.
I'm very sorry to hear that. And then you're confronted with, of course, having to arrange a funeral for a very young wife. Do you have children?
I do, yes. When she was diagnosed with brain tumours, my children were 3 and 4 years old. They're now 6 and 7 years old now.
Okay. As you had to go through the process, what struck you most about the costs? What surprised you the most, Jack?
Obviously, the figure itself. I don't think anybody tends to decide to Google how much is my funeral going to cost. No. It's just not something that comes naturally to anybody. I suppose in my case, you could argue we had some forewarning in terms of she had a terminal diagnosis, but it was very difficult to live in doom and hope, and that's what kept us going throughout that. But yes, to come back to the figure, it was just the extent. It was the initial quote was £6,600.
Good gracious.
And then obviously I will state though that I was obviously at her request for a burial, and the burial was particularly important simply because obviously for our daughters she wanted a place for them to come and,
of course,
if you like, be with her. So there was sort of an especially strong motivation to try and get her a burial. And she didn't have any requests around the funeral. We did away with all the bells and whistles, if you will.
So this was a fairly basic, I don't wish to in any way be confrontational or derogatory to you, but this was a fairly basic funeral then,
yeah,
really.
So we, they quoted for, a limousine, flowers, a celebrant, and we did away with all of that. We chose the cheapest coffin, which was still actually quite beautiful, but
yes.
it was the most basic. So, and even after it was all said and done, it only came down to around 6,100.
Really? And then presumably I'm sorry to talk about this, but there's the cost of your wife's, site. The actual grave itself has to be bought for, presumably.
Well, that is actually I think that's why there's such variance in the quotes that people get. So I think, I assume the cost is the land, essentially. Yes. So £2,700 of that £6,100 was the actual cost of the burial, the land.
Good Lord.
Yeah. So obviously, depending on which part of the country you're in, the cost of that land will vary. So the cost of the burial will vary. But if we wanted to have a cremation, and frankly, if I hadn't had children and that extra requirement, I would have obviously gone for it.
Do you mind my asking, this is awful, we're talking about your late wife.
No, please, no.
What would that have come in at then, Jack?
For a cremation?
Yeah.
Just over £3,000.
So about half price. Good Lord. Right. Okay. So, you're a young dad. You've just lost your wife. You've got two young children. Suddenly, you're presented with a bill north of £6,000. What did you do?
At that point, I found it hard to ask family again, because obviously up to this point, family had helped me a lot throughout, she was given 3 to 12 months to live, but she ended up living 2.5 years. But, in a way, we were a victim of our success in that, or her success in staying so long. That obviously meant we couldn't, it hurt us financially. So by the end of that process, we were completely depleted financially.
Yeah.
And I was at a point where I couldn't, it was hard to ask anybody else. So someone, quite ashamedly, I must say, I came to the decision with quite a lot of shame, but I felt I couldn't, I felt I had to swallow my pride and actually ask for help via GoFundMe.
Okay.
And within 7 hours of setting up that GoFundMe, the local community rallied, and £4,500 was raised within 7 hours.
My goodness. By the way, there's no shame at all, for God's sake, man. You've got to raise a young family. It's a huge check or credit card debt. So you got there, fortunately, because of the local people.
Yeah, and they kept on donating. The figure reached in the end 9,000. So
goodness.
The generosity of people, we are an empathetic country, and especially my town of Bromsgrove. I was so, so lucky to have that support, and the school parents all came together, and local community clubs, everyone. It's absolutely wonderful when you see the humanity in people.
Fantastic. I have to ask, the extra money that was raised, did you give it to charity, or did you send it back? What happened to the extra funding?
I was in a place, to be honest, where I literally, my goal was to just get what I could get for the funeral. But I frankly was, I also had to look, I also had beyond the funeral, so my household finances, and I had to essentially pay down the crippling debt that I didn't plan to use the money for, but I had to in order to try and safeguard me and my children's.
So it allowed you, you and your family to sort of settle a little and to move on at the most difficult time.
Yeah, I would have, otherwise I would have most definitely given it to charity.
Yeah, absolutely. My condolences again. Thank you for discussing so much. Best wishes to your children, Jack Taft, to their father of two, GoFundMe page. As that insurance company says, more and more people turning to crowdfunding or even some loan sharks as the cost of funeral. Well, they had the average there, didn't they, at 3,828 to be precise. It was 6,100 for that gentleman. We might take your calls on that. But to big news yesterday when the Prime Minister met with Emmanuel Macron in Paris and they signed this declaration that both the United Kingdom and France would play a role in peacekeeping forces, a declaration of intent. Here's some details outlined by Sir Keir Starmer.
This is a vital part of our ironclad commitment to stand with Ukraine for the long term. It paves the way for the legal framework under which British, French and partner forces could operate on Ukrainian soil, securing Ukraine's skies and seas and regenerating Ukraine's armed forces for the future.
But what does it mean for our military personnel who might actually serve there? In the first hour of the show, I spoke with General Sir Richard Sheriff, former Deputy Supreme Commander of NATO in Europe. He told me this move from Britain and France shows an intent to bring about peace.
You've got to work out what has got to be done, and then you've got to provide the means to do it. And at least now there's an intent to provide a reassurance force or get some boots on the ground. But it's got to be capable. And the reality is that unless there is, unless Russia is forced into this, the assumption must be anyway that Russia will break any ceasefire. And so such a force has got to be prepared to fight.
Sir Richard, what happens if I'm one of the brave military personnel who's part of this peacekeeping force and I or my colleagues are fired on by Russia? What are the rules of engagement?
This statement yesterday from the from Paris is pretty light on detail, and these are exactly the sort of things that need to be bottomed out. But the bottom line is also that if this can't be a lightly armed blueberry type peacekeeper, UN style. It's got to be prepared to enforce peace, and enforcing peace means being prepared to overmatch the Russians, and that means also being prepared to fight them if necessary.
So we could have British troops firing on Russian military personnel in Ukraine?
We could.
That's got to make you nervous, sir.
Yeah, it is, but it's realistic that there's not going to be a lasting peace until Russia is forced into it and forced to accept Ukraine as a sovereign state and Zelensky as president. And thus far, we've seen no indication at all that Russia is prepared to acquiesce with the discussions that we saw in Paris yesterday.
And unsurprisingly, that elicited some comment from you starting in the first hour. Jack in Romford.
I'm an ex-military myself. I've currently been out of the forces for 10 years now. The thought of having British boots on the ground, Nick, in Ukraine, for me, I find is absolutely obscene. Considering the impact of what recent wars have had, especially on British men, the thought of having extras now put into Ukraine and the politicians signing this agreement to go and do this, Macron and Starmer doing this, but what will happen is it will be the local boys that suffer. You wouldn't ever see a politician's son deployed out.
Robert's in East Grinstead.
I would listen to the people that want elections, because Fakir, I think, has no interest really in real peace out there. He would have raised the enlistment age. 70-year-old women were being armed in Ukraine in February 2022 out there. Okay, he's a joke. What's he going to do when he gets to Kiev?
Dale is in Shrivenham.
I just find it really ironic that you've got two leaders in Starmer and Macron willing to say they're going to protect Ukraine's borders, and both of them can't even protect our own borders. The thing is with Putin, he's got armour. we can't even stop rubber dinghies. Yeah, our mixed forces. And if they went for a conscript, I wouldn't want my sons or anybody's children going protecting this country, because I've been there and a lot of forces have been there. We just get dumped once we've done our service and we're forgotten about.
Let's continue the conversation with Peter in Fleet. Peter, how supportive or otherwise? Hello, sir. How supportive or otherwise are you of this?
I'm very supportive. I think that we need to think what would happen if we did nothing. And I think the cost to Europe, the cost to this country would be far greater if we did absolutely nothing. I mean, there is a Norwegian think tank in collaboration with the Institute of International Affairs that has predicted actually a cost of 1.6 trillion euros if there is a Russian victory. Whereas if we did something, it would cost about 800 billion euros.
What happens when British military personnel are fired at?
Well, they have to shoot back. I mean, we put our forces in danger before. In Afghanistan, what was that for? We lost 400 men in Afghanistan.
Now, just to go through the figures, 457 fatalities, 616 serious injuries, 7,800 what they call battlefield treatments. That was
I didn't know that.
Yeah, well, that's my job. Don't worry. So that's
my question, therefore, is why did we do that in Afghanistan? What was it for?
Do we want to do it again?
Well, yes, well, because it threatens us. Afghanistan, the Taliban never, ever, ever threatened the UK or Europe.
Well, terrorist activities, I have to
say. Yes, but they were not. They never exported their terrorism, ever. There was never a terrorist incident in Europe by the Taliban. It never happened.
I thought some of the terrorists hid out in Afghanistan, my recall.
Yes, one did. Osama bin Laden, correct.
Yeah.
But they gave him, under Islamic law, they gave him shelter, but they never actually exported their terrorism to Europe.
Okay. So, you say that this is worthwhile. Peter, thank you. Let's see if others agree. I'm late to the news, so I will. But Peter, thank you for your input. More calls on that. We're also talking about the rising costs of funerals as well. And I will finally put you out of your misery, if you are in any, and let you know what the President is doing.
When she gets in... drops the thing, walks off the stage crying, her mother's crying, her father's crying.
It does involve his wife, but I'll leave that you thinking on that. It's 9:47, LBC News Headlines, Dominic Ellis.
The Trump administration has suggested that the US military could be deployed to annex Greenland. President Zelensky says talks between US and Ukrainian officials about security guarantees for Kyiv are due to resume in Paris. And learner drivers could face longer waits for tests as part of updated road safety rules in England and Wales. LBC weather, largely dry with sunny spells today. Snow showers continuing for large parts of Scotland and the northeast of England, a high of 10 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb on the M26. The eastbound exit slip road at Junction 2A, so that's the Rootham turning, is closed. It's following an accident. Very busy on the M20 eastbound at Junction 4 at Leybourne, and that's where a lorry's broken down and there are queues of about a mile on the approach. Borough High Street stays closed both ways because of the ongoing investigation. And also these problems continue at Roehampton. Roehampton Lane is closed because of a burst water main, and that's also causing delays. On the Underground, there are minor delays on the Central and Bakerloo line because of an ongoing shortage of trains. Better news on the Elizabeth line. Those delays have cleared, but southeastern services are still disrupted via Paddock Wood, and that's because of a power problem.
Coming up at 10 on LBC, James O'Brien.
You wait years for a phone in about Greenland, and then three come along at once. And why on earth is Elon Musk permitting absolute filth to be published on Twitter?
James O'Brien at 10. Listen on our free Global Player app or the new LBC app.
Oh, how relaxing was that yoga session? I feel so free.
Speak for yourself. I can never let go.
Bladder leaks. I know, right? I'm so done compromising. I got a new bit of yoga kit. Always discreet pads. Here, try for yourself next week.
Love you lots, but this thin pad won't keep up with my heavy leaks.
Just trust me on this one. So, all zen and liberated, are we?
Let's just say I found my flow.
Always discreet. Live with no compromise.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060 973. LBC.
Did you know Vets for Pets are
the nation's most trusted vets?
We think that's because they're
locally owned
and locally loved.
Wherever you are,
we've got a vet local to you.
Vets for Pets. We're all for pets. Based on a survey. To verify, search vetsforpets.com/allforpets.
Chase is the digital bank you can count on.
How so?
Because you get 1% cash back on your grocery shop.
Like on prosciutto?
Yeah, prosciutto.
And seaweed crackers?
Sure, those two.
Oh, hang on. What about rotisserie chickens?
If it's in your grocery shop, Chase has got your cash back. Join today and get 1% cash back on debit card spending on groceries, fuel and everyday transport. Chase. See what your money can do. 18 plus UK residents eligibility applies. 1% cash back for your first year. Maximum £15 per month. Exceptions apply.
Sunlight's guaranteed over 50 plan. Gave confidence to Jane and Chris. With their insurance sorted, they're becoming naturists. Cutting loose in their birthday suits. Feeling elegant and free. But when they answered the door, the postman saw more than he expected to see. Sunlight, a little confidence goes a long way. No medical questions and a cash payout. Search Sunlight cover today.
Premiums paid could exceed the payment. Full cover after 1 year. Ages 49 to 85.
Ears are great, aren't they? One on each side of your head for stereo. It's because of ears that radio ads can amplify your advertising. 40 million adults listen to commercial radio every week. That's 80 million ears, give or take. See radio differently at radiocentre.org.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
Should we talk briefly about marriage? Now, let's face it. By the way, I've got through my first Christmas as yet again a married man. We survived that one, so we see how we go. But in all marriages, there are degrees of tension. And here's President Trump in Washington yesterday, in which he revealed what is the thing his wife Melania hates about him the most, and it's to do with cutting the rug.
She said, you know, she's a very classy person, right? She said, it's so unpresidential. I said, but I did become president. You know, somebody, she hates when I dance. I said, everybody wants me to dance. Darling, it's not presidential. She actually said, could you imagine FDR dancing? She said that to me. And I said, there's a long history that perhaps she doesn't know. Because he was an elegant fellow, even as a Democrat, right? He was the attack by Japan, you know, he was quite elegant. But he wouldn't be doing this. But nor would too many others. But she says, darling, please, the weightlifting is terrible. And I have to say this, the dancing they really like. She said, they don't like it. They're just being nice to you. I said, that's not right. The place goes crazy. They're screaming, dance, please. But the weightlifting. But no, the girl gets up. And you see, I want to be more, but I have somebody watching. I want to be more effusive. I want to really, yeah. But she gets it. Oh, drops the thing, walks off the stage crying, her mother's crying, her father's crying.
A dirty dancing president. Let's come back to your social media and text regarding the incompetence of West Midlands Police. Mike in Crawley, I remind you, he was in law enforcement for many years. It would appear the concept of computer says now is now directing the West Midlands Force. The problem with that incident and the car crash is lazy investigation. That is where, of course, 14 South Yorkshire got the identities of the victim who died and a victim who was seriously injured wrong. Instances are currently in single figures, but project to the future where officers increasingly use technology that could be shaped, influenced, or indeed invented by AI. Mark Sells in Cambridgeshire. Can I suggest we explore the role of the Home Secretary in this debacle? This is extremely high profile. It's inconceivable that she was not involved in the decision-making process. John says, as a retired police officer with 40 years service, I agree with your analysis of West Midlands Police appeasement and obfuscation. Not for the first time. Remember public disorder in the summer. I've disappointed Peter Fahey as a judge of Chief Constable's decision-making. All right, we might pick up on that, but let's talk about the cost of funerals in that conversation I had with someone who had to give to a GoFundMe to pay for his widow's, late wife's funeral. His late wife's. Rebecca's in Glasgow. Rebecca, you're on the radio. Good morning.
Good morning. We lost our mum in the summer last year.
Sorry.
She'd been diagnosed with cancer and put up a really good fight for 3 years.
How many years did you say? Sorry. Three years. Very good.
But she left making a will till it was very late, and my father had passed without making a will.
Oh, God.
So before my mum's solicitor could sort out her will, she had to sort out my dad's share of the estate. So she passed worrying about whether everything was going to be okay for us going forward.
Right.
Now, when it came to her funeral, she had some specific requests. She wanted to be cremated, and she wanted to be cremated at the cemetery that wasn't far from her house. But the problem was the cemetery is situated just over a local authority border.
Mm-hmm.
And it's also the most popular in the area.
Oh.
So anybody from outside of that area is charged a higher fee.
Why is it so popular?
Because it's in the middle of nowhere. It's kind of like on the outskirts of Glasgow.
Right.
And it's quiet, it's peaceful, and it's just in a beautiful surroundings. And okay. That's, I think, what makes it very popular.
Of course, right.
So okay. I think we ended up paying £1,500 for the crematorium alone.
Good Lord.
All in all, Mum's funeral was £7,000, and that was for a cremation.
£7,000 for a cremation? My goodness.
Yes. Yes.
Do you mind my asking, were there a lot of cars or, you know, did it go for sort of, you know, one of those horse-drawn things that you see sometimes?
No. Okay. We had the hearse.
Right.
And just for ease, we agreed to have one car.
Right.
But the cost of transporting my mum's body from a funeral home in Glasgow, to the outskirts of Glasgow, was £236 just for that short journey. So you've got to really think about these things.
Of course.
And we're still paying. We still haven't got everything settled. And our current legal bill at the moment is just over £9,000.
Why is that ongoing? That's still yet to be resolved then, is it?
Yes. The thing is, my mum didn't have a straightforward will. She didn't. Oh. She wasn't leaving everything to my sister and I. She was bypassing us to leave the property to my son because of the housing situation.
Right.
So she thought, well, I'm going to leave my house to my grandson. So, of course, that's doing something a little bit different, so it takes longer.
Right.
So basically, everything my mum had saved to leave to us has gone in funeral costs and legal fees. So as a cautionary tale, please, everybody out there, two things you need to do in life is either start a funeral plan or a savings account for it.
Yeah.
And get your will done.
Rebecca, a solicitor prepared your late mother's will in which she chose to leave the house to her grandson, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So that was legally drawn up, but it's still taking this long and this expensive to actually put into practice.
Yes. The reason being because my father passed away without a will.
Ah.
So basically what had to happen,
you got it, yeah.
This is why I'm saying make a will, because My father was Indian, and over in India, they don't really make wills. Everything's just passed to the wife and
passed
to the children.
Okay, right.
But so I think he just assumed it would be the same, but it's not.
Oh.
So basically, you know, the lawyer had to go to court, and she had to then make sure that, you know, my father's half of the estate was then, she didn't know whether to transfer it to my mum and then to my son, but then it was just transferred to my son, but the judge had to approve all of this.
I hear what you're saying. Rebecca, thank you for that story. So that is obviously the wrinkle through your late dad, and just at a time when you want everything to be fairly smooth, you're coping with the loss of your mother. You have this to go through. Obviously, my sympathies to you and your sister, well, and the whole family on that. If we've learned anything, for goodness sake, make a will. Even if you're a young person, young man, or you've got some possessions, make a will. It is vital. You had the last word. I'm done for another day. James O'Brien's waiting for the other side of the news. Now, if you missed any of today's show, listen back on our free Global Player app or the new LBC app, where you can stay up to date on top stories and opinions, put your news categories in the order that you want, and pause and rewind live radio and listen to a range of podcasts. Download the official LBC app for free from your app store now. James, the other side of the news. I'm back with you tomorrow morning from 7. Meantime, do stay safe.
Thank you, Nick. The time is approaching 10 o'clock, and there is a question, albeit that it's often asked in a slightly passive-aggressive fashion. In fact, sometimes in quite an aggressive fashion, that I get asked rather more than you might imagine. And the question is, why on earth are you talking about anything else other than this? The problem, of course, with that question is that it speaks directly to people's personal interests, prejudices, obsessions, priorities. Why on earth are you talking about this thing when what I think is really important is missing entirely from your agenda? But today and yesterday and the day before, and although we weren't here, arguably the day before that, there is only one thing we should be talking about, and it remains the potential military invasion of Europe by the United States of America.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 10 o'clock, talks between US and Ukrainian officials about security guarantees for Kyiv are expected to resume in Paris today. British and French troops have been promised to help defend Ukraine from future attack if a peace deal with Russia is agreed. Sir Keir Starmer is expected to be questioned by MPs about the details at Prime Minister's questions this lunchtime. Former Deputy Supreme Commander of NATO, General Sir Richard Shirriff, has spoken to LBC.
This statement yesterday from the from Paris is pretty light on detail. But the bottom line is also, this can't be a lightly armed, blueberry-type UN style. It's got to be prepared to enforce peace. And enforcing peace means being prepared to overmatch the Russians. And that means also being prepared to fight them if necessary.
The Trump administration has suggested the US military could be deployed to take over Greenland. President Trump sees the semi-autonomous Danish territory as a national security priority. European leaders have joined Denmark in saying that Greenland belongs to its people. Learner drivers in England and Wales could have to wait up to 6 months before sitting their theory and practical tests. The proposals are part of the government's new road safety strategy. The plans will be subject to consultation. Submerged, the government is spending £4 million a year on a prison that it can't use. HMP Dartmoor hasn't been able to hold inmates since August 2024 after abnormal levels of a radioactive gas were detected. The Public Accounts Committee says ministers could be locked into a contract for the jail for another 8 years. The Ministry of Justice says it inherited a prisons crisis. Hundreds of schools are closed for a third day in Scotland, where a yellow warning for snow covers large parts of the country. Aberdeenshire has also declared a major incident because of heavy snowfall, while a cold health alert's been extended to all regions of England until Sunday. Meteorologist Claire Nasir has told LBC that Storm Goretti will bring further disruption tomorrow.
We've seen about half a metre of snow across the northeast of Scotland over the last few days. More snow to come today. Some communities have been cut off. But we look to the southwest, where an area of low pressure will deepen and strengthen through Thursday afternoon, bringing wet and windy weather, severe gales. Now, as this area of low pressure skirts along the south coast, bringing those very damaging winds, as the rain spews northwards and counters the cold air, it's likely to turn to snow.
In the city, a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading down 52 at 10,070. The pound buys $1.34 and €1.15. LBC weather largely dry with sunny spells today. Snow showers continuing for the north and east of Scotland and the northeast of England, a high of 10 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
Hey Sainsbury's, any way you can save me a few quid on my weekly shop?
Well, Jane, try Your Nectar Prices. Every week in Your Nectar app, you can unlock up to 10 personalised discounts on things you love at Sainsbury's. A Janesbury's, if you will.
Sounds like my kind of place.
Get personalised discounts with Your Nectar Prices. That's good food for all of us. Janesbury's. I mean Sainsbury's. 18 plus Nectar app required. Unlock up to 10 Your Nectar Prices weekly. Available in supermarkets, online and in locals with Smart Shop. TNCs apply.
This is LBC from Global. Leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
Good morning. It's 4 minutes after ten, and it goes against my instincts, you know. It goes against my better instincts. And yet, the times when we've done it, which are fairly rare, has been indubitably, absolutely the correct thing to do. When we find ourselves circling back to very similar territory to the territory that we've already explored the previous day or the day before that. I mean, there were times, weren't there, during Brexit, and I suppose most obviously during COVID, where it felt as if there was only really one story in town, one thing worthy of our attention. But I'm just going to run something by you, if I may. And it literally occurred to me 5.5 minutes ago. While I was in the production office, just chewing the fat, and it literally occurred to me in that moment that we've entered. Well, no, maybe we haven't, but we could enter the don't look up phase. I don't know if you remember the call yesterday. I don't know if you were listening. Where to a caller who brought the five stages of grief into the conversation, of which, of course, denial is a crucial part, and it is still there. A denial of the gravity of the situation that we're currently facing as Donald Trump essentially leads America out of the post-world order. It's impossible to exaggerate the significance and the importance of this moment if, as seems almost certain, the traffic continues to move in that direction. And it's such an enormous thing to contemplate that there is a temptation not to look up. That's a reference, if you don't know, to a Leonardo DiCaprio film, which is an allegory for climate change and posits the notion of a comet, a meteorite heading towards the Earth that will destroy humanity. And the evidence of its imminent arrival is pretty much uncontestable, and yet humanity elects, or significant sways, enough of humanity elects to just ignore it and carry on as normal until the moment of a potential impact. No spoilers here. And you can see why. It's a beautiful psychological exercise. I got a little bit obsessed with it a couple of years ago because it was the big hit over Christmas, wasn't it? And it works so perfectly in the context of climate change. But there's a lack of immediacy to climate change that just slightly weakened the allegory. You know, you can see a comet, you can see a meteorite on a screen heading towards you, and you know that it's going to blow your species to smithereens. Would it really kick in psychologically in the same way that imminent climate catastrophe kicks in? I don't know, but it was a powerful and a rather brilliant rhetorical exercise. And where does the Trump story sit between those two poles? So you've got imminent catastrophe that is too complicated, too difficult, and arguably too far off to focus our attention as it should. And that's in the real world. And then you've got the fictional imminent catastrophe of the meteorite hitting the Earth. And somehow we persuade ourselves that that's too big to worry about. It's not complicated, it's not difficult, and it's not far off. But we can still psychologically look the other way. We can still psychologically look down, not look up, pretend that it's not happening. And I don't know where this story fits into that scale. It's been an incredible 3 days, 2.5 days, where, I mean, you've gone, remember, it was only on Monday that people were telling us that Donald Trump is brilliant and the invasion of Venezuela or the annexation of Venezuela is wonderful and you shouldn't worry about international law and ha ha ha, I love him because he upsets all the right people. Admittedly, there aren't many people doing that anymore. Even some of the most knuckle-headed professional commentators and politicians appear to recognize or to be able finally to read some of the writing on the wall. But it was still going on. If you've got your sort of pro-Trump scarf knotted so tightly around your neck that it's cut off the flow of all oxygen to your brain, all blood to your brain, then you kind of have to stay on this. You have to stay on this tip of, oh, isn't Trump wonderful? You can't get off it. But anybody vaguely cognizant and anybody vaguely conscious intellectually is now aware of the fact that this is different. And the main proof of the difference is not in Venezuela, of course. It's in the words that are coming out with regard to Greenland. Although Venezuela is pretty helpful too. Two or three elements of the Venezuela story that I think should be a little bit more prominent would include the fact that if the rationale for getting rid of Maduro was that his regime was so toxic, why on earth have they replaced him with his deputy? Number two, the living conditions and the daily experience of the average Venezuelan has got worse since Maduro went. Number three, the sort of de facto leader of the opposition commission has been talked about with borderline contempt by Donald Trump and doesn't seem likely to be installed anytime soon, which means the argument about being an upholder or a defender of democracy was absolute toot. Number four, the former president of Honduras, of course, was pardoned while serving a 45-year sentence for trafficking cocaine, which makes a mockery of the claim that it was done in order to punish